morning. Council can take their seat. I will call the Dallas City Council meeting for Wednesday, September 21st, 2016, to order. Thank you all for being here. We will begin with an invocation. And we are excited. This weekend is our Greek Food Festival. So Father Christopher Kassantinidis, the presiding priest of Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, is here. The Orthodox Church is in Mr. Kleinman's district, and Father Chris was born in Washington, D.C., grew up in Chicago, received his B.A. From Holy Cross Greek Orthodox School of Theology. After being ordained in 1979, he was assigned to Holy Trinity and ordained to the priesthood a month later. He served as the parish's assistant priest, returned as the presiding priest. He is an institution in Greekdom in Dallas, and a great member of our community. He and his wife, Angie, have two sons, and I appreciate you being here, Father. All rise.
Almighty God, as our city council gathers together this morning to begin their deliberations and work for the people of Dallas, which we have entrusted to their care, we express our sincerest thanks to you for the many blessings that you have bestowed upon each and every one of them. We ask you, O Lord, that as our leaders have been charged with the responsibility of administering the various and many events in Dallas, that you remember these, your most faithful and pious public servants, which you have counted worthy to be appointed over this city. Crown them with the armor of truth and goodwill. Grant to them deep and undeprivable peace, and speak good things to their hearts, about your houses of worship. We also pray and ask, O compassionate Lord, that you bless and watch over all of the members and people of the city of Dallas. Also extend your watchful eye over those who place their lives in the line of danger every day to protect us and this great city of Dallas, the police, the firefighters, the first responders, to the unforeseen events that we as a city, state, and country now face. We ask this in your name, O Lord, so that within the peace you bring, we may lead a calm and quiet life in all piety and dignity. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen.
Mayor.
Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And thank you, Father Chris, and the Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church. This has been an incredible fixture in the city of Dallas for over 100 years, and we are so excited to be having the Greek Food Festival in Dallas. We're in a season of wonderful fall festivals, and this is probably the best one out there. I encourage people to go, because if there is a place in Dallas where you can have hundreds of people and feel like you're just at the family dinner table, it is at this event. There's a lot of love, a lot of dancing, a lot of fun. It's just a great, great event. And thank you very much for, again, bringing it to Dallas so folks in Dallas can enjoy the Greek Food Festival. So thank you all for being here.
There's Tina and Frank Becker. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Ms. Alonzo's wants to introduce a new member to our community.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor, I wanted to, as we started the celebration for Hispanic Heritage Month, I wanted to ask for your permission to formally introduce our General Council of Mexico. He is new to our city, Mr. Francisco de la Torre, if he would say a few words while he comes up to the podium. Pásale para la. He is being accompanied by Ruben Ubando. He is the press secretary. Andres Galvan, the Council for Community Affairs. Victor Arriaga, he's the deputy counsel, and Jennifer Aperti. Consul, bienvenido.
Thank you so much. Mayor Mike Rawlings, Honorable Pro Tem Mayor Monica Alonso, members of the City Council, it is an honor for me to address you this morning. As you know, I arrived to Dallas the first day of June, and I had the opportunity of traveling and hosting in Mexico a trade mission led by a successful businessman and an outstanding politician with diplomatic skills, Mike Rollins. A month later, a tragedy struck the heart of Dallas, and people needed a leader. In that moment, I discovered another set of skills in the mayor of this great city. My acknowledgement for him and the leaders that are here this morning. Honorable Council members, let it be known that the Mexican Consulate stands strong in solidarity for Dallas as part of a community. I represent the Mexican government, but I have a 5-year-old son and a 3-year-old daughter. This means I have to raise them with a community spirit and a sense of belonging to the place they live in, the school they attend, and even to the sports team they cheer, of course, Dallas and Rangers. I would like to thank Mayor Pro Tem Monica Alonso for helping us translate and understand the cultural codes of the community in order to serve them better and together. By the way, a few days ago, I discovered that Mike Rollins has a cultural profile too when he attended a new collaboration between Mexico and Dallas through the Talavera exhibition in the Crow Collection that will be open for several months. I am a strong believer of a prosperous North America. I am convinced that no walls can stop integration and understanding among friends, partners, and allies. Thousands of Mexicans live in the Metroplex and Dallas and contribute on a daily basis to the well-being of the region. Let the example of the Mexico-Dallas relationship pave the way to other regions and cities across Texas and the United States. Honorable Council members, I rest my case. Thank you for the warm welcome and the openness for collaboration with the Mexican Consulate and all its members. Thank you.
Thank you, Consul General, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ms. Alonzo.
Thank you.
Ms. Alonzo has a special presentation today.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As part of our Friendship City relationships with Sendai Japan, the Japan American Society hosts the Dallas Sendai Young Ambassadors Program each year to build friendship and goodwill between our cities. As part of this program, Dallas and Sendai alternate sending students delegations each year. During their time in the cities, the students stay with host families, visit local schools and government officials, learn about local history and culture, and enjoy shopping, sightseeing, and making new friends. The 2016 Young Ambassadors from Dallas visited Sendai June 27th through July 5th. Selected as the 26 Young Ambassadors were, and I will ask if they would please join us up in the podium. And that is Catherine Alejo. Catherine is from the Irma Lerma Rangel Young Women's Leadership School here in Dallas. Jesus Cantu. Jesus is from the School of Science and Engineering Magnet in Dallas. Carmel Joseph from Dr. John Horn High School in Mesquite. And I also wanted to recognize, although they may be, one of them is running late, but I will recognize them anyway. Katrina Platt, she's a Silver Eagle Academy in Plano. And Jen Rose Sampson is from the John Horn High School in Mesquite. And Zion Corna is from Hebron High School in Carrollton. We would like to recognize these students and thank them for their excellent representation of Dallas during their time in Sendai this summer. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm sorry.
No, please.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Catherine Alejo, and I am a junior attending Irma Lerma Rangel Young Women's Leadership School. On behalf of the Young Ambassadors today, I would like to say how extraordinary and successful our trip to Sendai was. Not only did we create unbreakable bonds with our friends from Sendai, but we also had the opportunity to open our minds and explore the Japanese culture, which we all found to be truly beautiful. We also taught our welcoming host families about our own backgrounds, as well as the life here in Texas. This program is so important because of the relationships that are built between the two sister cities. I think we can all agree that this experience was life-changing, and leaving Sendai that last day was heartbreaking. We are all left with great memories and nostalgic feelings, but we hope one day we can return to the beautiful Sendai.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm going to get the honor of visiting Sendai this fall, and I hope you left it in one piece, and looking forward to experiencing what you experienced. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay, great. Thank you, Ms. Alonzo. Before we move on, there are two passings that I want to recognize with the City Council. First, former Dallas City Council member, Mayor Pro Tem Don Hicks, died at the age of 84 in his Midlothian nursing home on Tuesday. He was elected as an Oak Cliff representative in 1977. He was a minister and business consultant and was elected for three terms on the council and served as mayor pro tem. He also spent time on the Dallas Independent School District Board in 1985, and he was a true servant of the city of Dallas and spent many years being that public servant. So our well wishes go out to Mr. Hicks' family, and thank you for his service. Also, our hearts go out to Councilman Thomas. He lost his mother this week, and we are sorry. We've many of us have been through that, and we know how important that is. So our thoughts and prayers are with you as well, Mr. Thomas. Thank you. With that, we will take our open microphone speakers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your first five registered speakers will be Jeff Woodward, Terry Greenberg, Jacqueline Espinal, Carol Bell Walton, and Christine Mills. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks will be removed from the session of the meeting. Individuals are allowed 2 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on the screen. When your time is up, please allow the next individual their turn. You should state your name and address for the record, as well as address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Again, your first speaker is Jeff Woodward. Mr. Woodward.
Good morning. I'm Jeff Woodward. I live at 1302 East Canterbury Court in Dallas, and I'm the managing director of the Dallas Theater Center. I'm speaking on behalf of the center today. First, I want to thank all of you for your service to Dallas and to the City of Dallas through the Office of Cultural Affairs for the support that we receive at DTC. It's greatly appreciated. I'm here today to encourage you to support the AT&T Performing Arts Center's request for the City's participation in retiring ATPAC's outstanding capital construction debt. DTC is one of five resident arts groups at ATPAC. We produce a season of 9 plays. This year will include 2 world premieres, musicals, including Bella, which opens this week and then moves to New York later in the year. We reach an audience of about 100,000 people, and we have a strong commitment to arts education and community engagement, and this through several programs, including Project Discovery, which provides busing tickets, workshops, and discussions for over 3,500 Title I students in Dallas and in North Texas. We have 2 in-school residency programs at Booker T. Washington and South Oak Cliff High School, where we provide students with training with our professional actors, and then they come to see our performances and rehearsal. And we recently launched a new initiative called Public Works Dallas, where we are partnering with 5 community centers in Dallas, including Victory Meadows, Jubilee Park, Lyft, Balcon Lake Together, and the City of Dallas Parks and Recreation Department, for a year of classes and workshops that will culminate in a production of Shakespeare's The Tempest at the Wiley Theater, which will feature over 200 Dallas residents. But I'm here today to ask for your support of ATPAC. As a resident company, we receive an array of services and support from ATPAC. They maintain and take care of our facility, which includes 2 performance spaces, an education center, a costume shop, and offices. They provide production, box office, front of house, parking, and security services. They help us with marketing, public relations, and fundraising, and they've agreed to partner with us on Public Works Dallas. In short, they are critical to my company, and we wouldn't be able to do what we do without them. A financially healthy APAC, free of capital debt, is a very good thing for DTC and for Dallas. I am new to Dallas, and I came here a year ago, not only because of the job opportunity at DTC, but because of Dallas. This is an amazing city that is transforming in front of me on a daily basis. A big part of this transformation is the Arts District, an amazing collection of cultural institutions, businesses, restaurants, apartments, condominiums, a high school, and a beautiful park. No other American city has an Arts District as large and as impressive as Dallas. ATPAC is the eastern bookend of the Arts District and is critical not only to my company, but to the health and vitality of the Arts District. So please support their request. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and welcome to Dallas.
Terry Greenberg. Ms. Greenberg will be followed by Jacqueline Espinal.
Good morning, Mayor, Council, and guests. I'm Terry Greenberg, CEO of Interrupt, the North Texas Alliance to Reduce Unintended Pregnancy in Teens. And our name should tell you something is very wrong in our city. When forming our alliance of over 50 nonprofits and individuals, we had a long discussion about the word unintended. The fact is that many teens in Dallas are actually trying to get pregnant. The needs assessment performed for us by Texas Women's University showed that when asked, how would you feel if you found out that you were pregnant or had gotten someone pregnant, only 49% of teens in Dallas's most impoverished areas said they would be very upset. 21% would be pleased. We need to make change in social norms from a very macro level, starting with letting parents know how hard it is for teen parents to be scholastically and economically successful, and letting teens know that being a parent is hard. This kind of messaging is needed, and the message has impact when coming from a city of leaders who care about teens' futures. We care because teen births lead to unemployment and poor employment preparedness due to school dropout caused by childbearing, loss of tax revenue, and cost to children of teen parents who are more likely to live in poverty, be poorly prepared for school, be sick, neglected, abused, and end up in prison. We have provided most of you with teen birth rate statistics in your districts. You know that Texas is number 5 in teen birth rate in the nation and number 1 in repeat teen births. The birth rate in Dallas is even higher than the state rate. It is unacceptable and bad for our teens, their children, and our community. The city of Milwaukee tackled this head on with a citywide marketing campaign. That, combined with what Interrupt and its partners are already doing, giving medically accurate, evidence-based teen pregnancy prevention programs to both parents and teens, and helping to expand access to contraception, dropped the birth rate in Milwaukee 54% in 3 years. What we can do together is powerful. I urge you to find the money in this budget to start this citywide conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Jacqueline Espinal.
Good morning. We envision a vibrant year-round fair park managed for the benefit of all Dallas citizens. Dallas needs a bold vision that pays attention to the details. Public-private partnerships can work only when they exist for the public good. For too long, Fair Park has operated without ensuring public benefit and trust. It's time to change that dynamic. Presidio Trust in San Francisco and Central Park Conservancy are two shining examples of what's possible when a private entity works for the public good. El Presidio Trust's success is measurable and accountable. As of 2013, they're completely self-sufficient while creating a park that is for the benefit of all citizens. Their agreement called for a match of $4 for every $1 of taxpayer spent. According to Michael Boland, chief of operations, their strategy was simple. One, make a bold public statement by creating a public park first. Two, find tenants for the National Historic Landmark buildings that would generate income while ensuring preservation. And three, implement a robust community engagement model with diverse community stakeholders to create a land use strategy and plan. The Central Park Conservancy was born out of desperate times when New York was facing bankruptcy, and Mayor Koch instructed Gordon Davis to do more with less. He appointed Betsy Davis, with no budget or office, to make the park clean, safe, and beautiful. Their success is undeniable. Today, it's a model on how to manage an urban park. They have a robust governance structure that raises 75% of its $68 million operating budget. Their agreement leaves park policy and strategy to the City of New York while ensuring a diverse and inclusive board. Key to their success is the primary mission of ensuring public good where private interests are subordinate with transparency and accountability. Fair Park needs a new way forward and transparency, accountability, and due diligence that works for the public good. We demand, A, restore the grandeur and mission of Fair Park by creating a bold vision that ensures open and free public use of a great park that comes first. 2, benchmarking policy that includes skin in the game with a 4-to-1 match in private to public funds with a 5-to-10-year plan for self-sufficiency. 3, transparency and accountability in the form of Texas Open Meetings Act and Texas Open Records Policy. 4, public oversight by elected officials and community review board. 5, restructure the state fair lease to coexist with present and future tenants and with neighborhoods. State fair should adopt reforms called for in the city audit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Carol Bell Walton. Ms. Walton will be followed by Christine Mills.
Carol Bell Walton. I think we can all agree that the history of Fair Park is littered with some broken promises, and that probably broken promises would be the worst thing we could do with Fair Park right now. And what we were promising is a park that's not funded. We really need to make that our priority, and I think we could do that just by shifting the dollars around. Number one, on those naming rights, the foundation's never told us where the money's going to go. If they sell naming rights, all of that money should be poured into parks. They haven't shown us why they need the money for naming rights. Let's convert it to green. Number two, reallocate money to pay for the park by shifting the focus of the Fair Park Foundation to fundraising for art, fountains, and benches. If you take the $34 million allocated towards art restoration, fountain restoration, and small amenities for the park, you could shift that $35 million to green. We have one of the greatest arts communities in the world. They would support that. But you know what we also have? We also have park fatigue. How much money is being asked from our donor community for parks? $300 million for the Trinity, $40 million for Fair Park. When do they say enough? Shift the focus to the arts. They'll buy that. They'll support that. They'll want their name on a statue. $35 million. Now, I found $3.2 million in errors in this attachment to the Fair Park Foundation Management Agreement. $3.2 million. Let's add that to the $34 million. I found $1.6 million to repave the two parking lots that are supposed to be the park. Let's add that in. Let's make it green. There's $12 million for repaving. Let's add that in and let's make it green. We can sell the naming rights for the Cotton Bowl Plaza before this thing even starts for $5 million. It costs $3.5 million to repave it. Let's take that $5 million and make it green. Let's give these people a park. Now, what you're talking about, moving that fence, that moves the park from Fair Park to the ghetto. What you have is Mr. Human saying that the perceived problems with Fair Park is that it's unsafe and dirty and the surrounding areas are bad. So you're going to ask donors to put $40 million in a park that's not even secured by the fence? No. And then ask State Fair to step it up.
Thank you.
My goodness.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Christine Mills. Ms. Mills, not present. That concludes your speakers this morning. We move now to agenda item number one, approval of minutes of the September 7, 2016 City Council meeting.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to approve? Motion and second. Any edits, additions? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item number two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. For full council appointment, all nominated by the city manager to the Fire Code Advisory and Appeals Board is Thomas K. Mayer, who meets the registered engineer qualification, Mark Marek, who meets the fire protection engineer qualification, Edward R. Yost meets the registered architect qualification, Keller Webster meets the building contractor commercial qualification, Betty Sue Brewer meets the casualty insurance investigator qualification, and David A. Quadrini meets the active and community affairs retired corporate fire marshal qualification. To the Housing Finance Corporation Board, nominated by Councilmember McGew, is Clint V. Nolan. For individual appointment to the Animal Advisory Commission, you have Pat Rodriguez, nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Alonzo. To the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund Board, Callie M. Pruitt is nominated by Councilmember Kingston and meets the Housing Development Community Development Principles and Practices qualification. Those are your nominees this morning.
We got a motion. We got a second. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. All right. We move to item A, the budget. And let me kind of walk through how this is going to work. The purpose of today, our goal, our must-have today, is to approve a budget. We've got to get that done today. And so we will go through the budget process that I'll explain in a second. Then we will be doing that informally with a show of hands and discussions, and I'll explain that process in a second. Then we will come back and we will formalize it. So at that point, whatever we decide, Ms. Rios will read that into the record, and we will take a motion in a second and approve the budget. Then we will go to item number four, and this is the way the state does it. We will then set the tax rate commensurate to the budget that we approve. And we'll do the same thing formally. Both of these will be roll call votes. On item five, then, we will ratify the property tax revenues that are in the budget. And then six and seven is laying out the details in regards to water and civilian salary and merit pay increases and the like. We will then, that'll be the budget. We'll have the budget done. Item eight is a budget for an actual actuarial service that is needed. And then we will hold on item nine till after executive session, and I'll brief you on that, and we'll come back to that. So, the way we're going to do A, item A is this. When we last met, I think it was 2 weeks ago, there were two budgets. I'm going to call them the McGew and the Alonzo Griggs Callahan budgets. There were two budgets. Both received 12 people of supporting them, and three opposed. So we didn't get to kind of a final budget. We're going to take those up, and we will decide which has the most votes to move ahead. We'll vote on that. We will then decide which item moves ahead. Then we will take the amendments that were brought in sent into the city manager's office this weekend and on Friday. We will make sure that they are consistent with a balanced budget, and we will vote those up and down. At the end of that, we will have a new budget. We'll finalize the budget. then that's when Ms. Rios will read it into the record and we will vote on it. From a process standpoint, is that clear? Okay. So with that, Mr. City Manager, do you want to say anything?
We're hoping to conclude everything that's needed today. Feel very optimistic about that. Thank you for all your help.
You want to introduce?
We have at the table our new CFO, Elizabeth Raich, and Jack, Brittany, and Daisy, who are going to be, as we have in the past, keeping up with the changes in whatever amendments that you might be making or making sure that we have annotated your decisions.
Thank you. I asked Ms. Raich to recap budgets, the McGew budget and the Alonzo Griggs Callahan budget for us to do. So, Ms. Raich.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. So both budgets are built on the city manager's budget. So to recap that a little bit, so that we know what's completely before us, it's about a $3.1 billion budget in total, and it focuses on the areas that the public told us they were interested in, public safety, infrastructure, and code compliance. So I'll get to public safety in a minute because that's where some of the differences are between the two budgets. But in terms of streets and infrastructure, it does maintain streets with an average of zero degradation.
Ms. Rice, would you just make sure you stay close to the mic? Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's better.
In code compliance, this budget, both the city manager and an amendment that you all did agree on 2 weeks ago, provide an additional $2.7 million for Dallas Animal Services to deal with the loose dog issue. Also improves enforcement of property standards in multifamily and single-family rentals. It adds $1 million for homelessness initiatives, and it was a rigorous budget process that found $14 million in cost reductions or savings from various initiatives, Six Sigma initiatives, sunset reviews, and various analyses of contracts, salaries, and positions. So it was, a rigorous process based on public input and on analysis that came up with this $3.1 billion budget. So let me focus on public safety because that's where the two differ. So the first budget, the Magoo, city manager slash Magoo budget that the mayor referenced, changes the hiring plan for the police department. So the original budget called for 549 new officers. This plan adopts what the city manager proposed as a three-year phase-in. So it would be 449 officers next year, and then it would phase in the other additional officers over the following 2 years. So in Mr. Magoo's budget, he wanted to make sure that on top of the double-step increases that the city manager proposed, that every member of every uniformed employee received at least 5%. So for those at the very top step, his amendment adds a step so that they will then get a 5% increase ongoing. And for those who were at the next to last step, it allows them to get to that double step. So that amendment takes the money that is saved by phasing in the hiring, adds that step to ensure everyone gets at least a 5% salary increase. The tax rate under that plan would be 78.25. And the total new spending on police, fire, pay, pension contributions, et cetera, between what the city manager proposed in double steps and Mr. Magoo's proposal would be $43.8 million. So that is a significant new investment in police and fire. The second budget that's under consideration, referring to as the city manager slash Griggs budget, also invests in public safety a little bit differently. Again, it implements the three-year phased hiring, so brings down those officers to 449 next year. And phases in that hiring for $7.4 million in savings that we can use for other things. In addition, that budget eliminates $2 million in patrol pay. It does take the tax rate back up to the rollback rate. So the tax rate under this plan, under this budget, would be 78.42. It also uses $4.3 million of our reserves. And what it provides is what's worth a total of $14.7 million. It provides a one-time retention bonus paid April 1st or after of 3.31% for all uniform employees. And in both versions of this budget, there is an ambulance enhancement of a new ambulance staff starting in April.
Thank you for that recap. I will call on Mr. McGue to present his budget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Elizabeth, for the summary. There's two main points I want to make. First, based on a long history of working with our police and fire, this is something that we need to do. And the time is right. We need to give our officers raises. And the second thing is, as we continue to see on social media, these videos that constantly make my stomach now feel pain with officer-involved shootings and other things like this, the one piece of comfort I get is that I believe every time before I'm even looking at it that it's not going to be a DPD officer. And so I think for a number of reasons, we've got to take this opportunity to give our officers the raises. In this particular option, it keeps us from going back to the rollback rate. It allows there to be some cut in the rate for our citizens. And it doesn't dip into the reserves, which I think is a huge problem. And, I mean, if there was a reason to, maybe it is public safety, but certainly if we can get away from doing so, I think this is the way to do it. We are not going to be able to hire the number of officers that we originally believed we could, and the savings are there to do so. We have the full year cost, as it says there, is up to $9.5 million. I don't believe we're going to need that based on the way the half year and the anniversaries come across for the pay. And this gives the city manager the resources, I believe, in order to work the meet and confer process and get a deal as quickly and as efficiently as possible. I want that to happen. We have been encouraging you. I know you've heard the will of this council to get it done, and I believe this budget with this amendment helps get it done. And so I appreciate your support on it.
Thank you. We will then go to Mr. Griggs or Mr. Callahan, Ms. Alonzo, to talk about their budget. Mr. Griggs or whoever?
Please. Either of my colleagues want to say anything? I'll let Mr. Callahan speak.
Okay, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I think part of the reasoning behind this, and I want to make sure you understand fully across the board, there's an extra step on another amendment that I made on the back end. I know many people are concerned with going in and taking this fund balance of $4.3 million, but also amend back $2.1 million of those dollars. I think the benefit of our amendment just means that those monies are not pensionable. And I'm not sure the police and fire guys may be as excited about that as I am, but we already have a pension that is got challenges. And to add more money onto that, I recognize by paying pensionable dollars into the pension, that grows the pension fund. But also, if you look at the fact that the main recipients are those that have stepped out at the end of their career, they're only going to be putting in probably pensionable contributions for the next 1, 2, or 3 years. So the responsibility or the debt service on that pension is exacerbated because you're putting more dollars on top of that. Ours was an attempt to get them our goal was to get 5%, but because of the back and forth compromise and wrangling and just limited dollars, we were stalled out at 3.3%. But that is more of a incentive or retention type of pay or bonus, but it's not added to the pension. Now, to be fair, on the city side, we have to contribute the pension dollars. But that's the good thing. It adds money into the pension from the city side, but it doesn't require the officers to pay money into the pension program. And that's very key. Let me say that again. Pension, the city will add money into the pension, but the rank and file officers, they will not have to pay in it. But it also grows the pension nut, if you will. and allows that to be a greater sum of money built up over time without rating on that by having higher salaries that are pensionable. I think that was really what we were, or in my view, what we were trying to accomplish, but also getting not only the younger officers that had not topped that, get them under the city manager's budget a 10% increase, but also give them an additional increase over and above that to really show good faith to these new officers that, guys, you're coming in, you're coming out of the academy, you haven't stepped out. We're going to give you not only that 10% of the city manager, we're also going to give you an extra 3.3%, and then also giving the old guys or the back-end guys, the topped-out guys, a 3.3%. So I think that is what this accomplishes. And, again, for those of you that are concerned with rating the general fund reserve, we're putting 2.1 back in on my amendment if you support that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Griggs.
Thank you. Just a question for our city manager. How would you characterize the current meet and confer negotiations? Do you think we're close to a deal, so all this may be just a moot exercise?
I'm very encouraged by the recent conversations that we've been having. I don't know that that means that you all should not be taking action because it helps put resources in place for me to come back to you at some future point with whatever arrangement we can strike with them.
So you've made progress recently.
Yes.
Encouragement would mean we've got some recent progress. You're feeling better about things. Then this would just put the resources in place for a reallocation by the council on a as part of year one of a 3-year meet and confer.
Correct.
Given this progress in the negotiations, what would you say would be the soonest, and I know they're negotiations, nothing's final, but are these negotiations coming along where we might see something in October, the month of October?
Yes, we're planning to try to make it within that time frame, but given it's a negotiation and we're still working through a number of issues that need some hard work to be done, I don't want to guarantee it.
Yeah, no guarantees, but it's looking good. So you've had some progress in the last few days. It looks like we're going to get a 3-year meet and confer deal. Then we would come back after today's exercise in October and do a reallocation that would support that deal.
Yes.
Thank you.
Ms. Gates.
Open up for the, now that the amendment, the budgets have been presented. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I opened by saying both of these amendments, I thank my colleagues for bringing them forward. They put money back taking care of our police and fire, which is something that I know all of our council members are for, and especially during the environment of today, we need to take care of them and do everything we can for retention. I'm going to be supportive, though, of Mr. Magoo's, primarily for the two reasons that I do not want to see us get to a rollback tax. I think we have an opportunity in our to be able to share some of this new growth with our taxpayers. And I don't think we should max that out. And then dipping into the reserves is a dangerous practice, and it's not a cookie jar. And there's I'm not comfortable with the, you know, it's for reserves or for unexpected expenses, and starting for operating type expenses, looking into reserves is not at all responsible financial decision making. Because these are going to be ongoing costs going forward, and we can't expect to continue to do that. So for those reasons, and I know Mr. Callahan mentioned he wanted to put it back, but that's not connected to putting it back. So I think that's why this is responsible, and it gets more money out to police and fire. And then I would just close by saying, you know, encourage our city manager to take this money and negotiate. Because we all recognize and understand that no matter how much money we put in the budget, until there's a meet and confer or until the current one expires, this money cannot get out and will not be able to play a part in retaining our officers, which is crucial at this time. So encourage you to continue with the conversations and be able to use these resources to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Perhaps I'm confused from the previous discussion. I thought that Amendment 15 and Amendment 26 amounted to less than a 2% raise. Am I reading that wrong?
No. The full year cost would be about 9.5 of adding another step to the top. But because 2017, FY17, would be the first year of that, and those steps are awarded on anniversary date, when you phase that through the year, it's about half of the total cost. So the first year cost is about $4.75 million. So within the $7.4 million that Mr. Magoo proposes phasing in the hiring, we have enough money to cover a full 5% new step at the top.
Okay. If you say so, it is disturbing when answers change week to week. That's all I can say, is we have gotten, and many members have complained about it, including Mr. McGee. When he made his original amendment based on numbers given to him by staff, what I'm hopeful is that all this is just moot. And, I mean, I hear that there actually is a deal on me and confer, so hopefully we're arguing about nothing. This can't happen next year. I mean, if this happens next year, it's going to be hard to vote for any budget if we don't have certainty about what the effects of the amendments are. It's extremely disappointing. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Just a process check on something Mr. Kingston said. Meet and confer must be ratified by the council, correct?
Yes,
and
by
the membership.
So, yes.
So the fact that you are close to a deal, there's still that step, right?
Yes,
okay, I just wanted
a couple of steps. Then.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, I'd like to reiterate some of the points that my colleague Ms. Gates made with regards to dipping into the general fund, that balance reserves, that's really concerning to me. That reserve is there for periods of time when we cannot meet our obligations, not for dipping into at times when we're at the historically highest tax revenue we've seen in the history of Dallas. So that's just honestly a mistake. We need to make sure that reserve is there for the years where our tax revenues are not high, when our tax revenues are declining. So that's very concerning. I do have a couple questions for the city manager's office. If you look at the increases in public safety salaries as you proposed, and the budget increases, so that would be existing steps, double step, and then adding Mr. Magoo's amendment, how much total dollar increases are we going to salaries and public safety?
So that is an increase of $43.8 million for all of the uniform employees' pay increases and pension contributions.
New, or does that also include the increases from the existing people that are just moving through the step?
It includes everything, and okay. It includes what the city manager proposed plus what Mr. Magoo.
Okay, so... and the $43 million is the proposal, and then Mr. Magoo is on top of that, or does that include his?
That includes his. His actually doesn't change that amount, because what it's doing is taking $7.4 million, which had been in the city manager's original proposal for new officers, those 100 new officers,
okay.
And repurposes it to this additional step at the top. So that number remains unchanged between the city manager and this first option.
Okay, great. And then due to increasing property values, how much tax increase are we seeing if we did it at the currently proposed rate?
I'm sorry?
How much tax increases are we looking at? How much are we going to raise people's taxes, property taxes, based on the...
Well, under this proposal, it's actually lowering their property tax.
Really? My bill's going to go down?
Well...
My bill's going to go down from last year.
Well, I think...
The rate will.
The rate.
That's not what I asked. My bill go down from last year?
It depends
on the value of your home.
Okay, my value went up. Will my bill go down?
I don't believe that it will,
okay,
because...
How much money, due to increasing, how much money are we getting? It's the $66 million. Y'all have it in the next budget, in the next item here. Come on.
No,
okay. 60-something million. How much money because of
so value? 66 million is the increased revenues at the rollback rate.
Okay.
That's 66. The highest it would be.
Right.
This is actually a lower rate, so it'll be a little bit less than that. And when we get to that point in the process this morning of setting the rate and setting the revenues, we will make sure that those numbers match what's in the budget.
No, I get that. So somewhere around 60 million.
Well, to be clear, when we talked about increased taxes, it's been increase of property tax as well as sales tax. The increased property tax, there's a distinction between that which is coming up in the general budget and debt service. So we want to start,
You're killing me here. I'm just asking how much money are we getting because property values.
Just want to make sure that we're giving you the right answer.
You want me to give you the answer that I know is the right answer?
That'd be even better.
So about between 60 to 66 million, depending on where we set the tax rate. Yes? Do we all? Yes. Okay. So how much money is due to new stuff coming on the tax rolls? $19 million.
19.9.
Okay, $20 million. So there's about $60 million less $19 million just because new stuff come on the rolls. So the entire tax increase doesn't even cover this $43 million that's going to pay for raises for police and fire. Correct.
That's right, 43.8.
Okay. So my point is, colleagues, is it's about making choices. And the choice here, of course, I've advocated for reducing the taxes on our citizens. But look at how all of the increased tax revenue from our property taxes is going for public safety raises. That means it's not going for arts. It's not going for libraries. It's not going for more rec centers. It's not going for code compliance. It's not going for dogs. It's not going for homeless. It's not going for all the litany of things that we need to do in the city. We're making a choice here to take all of the tax increase that we're passing on to our citizens and putting it to public safety. And I just want people to be aware when they vote on that and make that choice. That being said, I support Mr. McGee's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, just Ted. I think there's tremors in heaven going on right now. Question on and I know this is perhaps getting ahead a little bit, but it's important to what we're talking about. When we talk about confiscated monies in federal and state, there's about $8 million in there. Is those funds just moved into the general fund, AC? Or are those funds sitting in the bank somewhere? And my reason for the question, could those monies be used to enhance police and fire pay?
We do have separate funds for the confiscated income that we do receive. Those are budgeted. They are allocated for a variety of different public safety items, equipment, and a number of different things.
But more directly to the point, are those monies spoken for in next year's budget?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have the two budgets. I'll ask each council person to show a hand. I'll ask to show a hand for Mr. McGee's first, then Mr. Griggs. And please vote once. Okay. Vote early and often sort of thing. Mr. McGee's, show of hands for Mr. McGee's. Okay. And does anybody vote for Mr. Griggs? All right. So we've got a budget. All right. Now we start amending that budget. Okay. We will take Miss Alonzo's got it good here. Mr. Kingston's ESL amendment. Mr. Kingston, I'll let you introduce it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dallas County has a 25% adult illiteracy rate that is almost entirely due to lack of English proficiency among adults who came here as adults. It is possibly one of the biggest contributors to ongoing poverty in Dallas. Maybe the fastest way to move someone from poverty into a middle-class life is teaching them English. For many years, the libraries, in partnership with private donors, have built a program which currently serves 2,700 children and adults in the city of Dallas through our libraries, teaching them English. That what that allows an adult who achieves English proficiency to do is move from about a cap of about a $9 an hour job on a construction site or cleaning someplace into jobs that are in the 12, 14, 15. There's no limit to where these people can go if we can teach them English. The private funding and the partnership with the library is frankly amazing. When I got the utilization numbers, I was so impressed. But what I know and what we've found out from staff's diligence on this question is that every year 800 adults are left off, cannot be enrolled in our ESL classes. These are people who want to learn English, who want to be a part of our society and our economy, and we can't get them in the program. And I just think that that is a massive oversight on our part. When we are, the Mayor's Poverty Task Force has opened our eyes to a lot of the causes of ongoing poverty in Dallas. Really thank Mr. Clayton for his work on that. The report was very clear on what things the city can and cannot do to affect this. And to my mind, the easiest and fastest one, and I know we all love quick wins, is to fully fund ESL. And because we're able to do that for a very low price per student, it only costs $160,000 to fully fund ESL so that we will have no one in Dallas who is turned away from English language training. Just one word about the source of funds. Again, to echo Mr. Kleinman, I think that in times of budgetary growth, you really don't want to draw down your reserves. The other thing is that the cut from the city attorney's office is going to be completely painless. We all know that with the hiring of a new city attorney, we are going to have some attrition in that office. They're at 110 lawyers. Frankly, that's too many anyway. So I don't believe we'll see any degradation in service from the city attorney's office from taking this very, really very small amount of money from there. So to me, comparing the two amendments, 27 and 28, one has real pain in terms of reduction in the reserve. The other is basically painless because it's almost certain that we will have a budgetary surplus due to attrition in the city attorney's office. So I'd encourage you to vote for 27. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold?
Yes. I want to just speak on this in terms of the attrition and the cost. I will not support this initiative, mainly because on Monday, I believe, in arts, the library just received some funding, and Mrs. Mayor Pro Tem Alonzo can help me on this, but I believe they've received a substantial amount of money to assist the ESL programs. So I think that in itself is, we did not. Oh, I was asking her because I thought we did. And so if the library is here, they can speak to it. But I do know we.
Right here.
All right, let's go ahead and speak. What did we receive on Monday? We can't hear.
The grant funding that we received is to maintain the current ESL program. GED program and homeless programs.
No ESL.
Not ESL.
Okay, there was no ESL on that form that I read.
No, it's okay.
All right, I think, would you pull that for me? So I would like to read that again because I think I did. But if it did not, I believe we need to seek other partnerships through some of the other school districts that we provide services to, such as RISD. I know Councilman Magoo has some schools in Richardson that are also in the Dallas jurisdiction. But I think at this time to pull money from the city attorney's office is not a decision we need to make. It's not a wise move, in my opinion, not to just be totally disregarding my colleague's suggestion. But in light of the fact that we have a slumlord issue that has existed over two decades in this city, we are now moving toward reorganizing that city attorney's office, and I think with a new focus based on the initiatives and direction that some of us will give to our lead attorney, we're going to need every penny and more. District 4 has one of the highest rates of slumlords, blight, and I know I will be an advocate to get these cases addressed and closed. Case in point, I'm moving toward the Bottoms in District 4 for revitalization.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
You're really kind of getting
off. Okay, well, I'm just going to say, in that case, we need it.
Okay.
Because we have a case that we lost, and now we're 4 or 5 years behind on that. So I'm going to continue to keep pushing for the monies that need to stay in the attorney's office. We have some environmental issues with blight and demolition. And so I will not support this, and I would encourage the others of us to strengthen that city attorney's office and redirect our partnerships and the efforts to get other partners to help us on these ESL classes. Thank you, Mayor. I didn't realize they had a time limit.
Well, no. I thought you were going off something else.
I just have to keep giving my evidence because
my bad. I thought you talked about the attorney's office, so
okay.
I appreciate it.
I manage.
Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to very quickly tell Mr. Kingston and also Ms. Alonzo, Mr. McGew, Mr. Wilson, you know, thank you for really taking this task force seriously. And everybody has said great things. If Mr. Kingston passes, I think it's great because I think we budget what we prioritize. We can be more efficient in a lot of departments, and that's why we have you know, Center for Performance Excellence, Efficiency, Sunset Review. So whichever passes, I pray this does pass because it is one of the single biggest things that we can do to affect our most vulnerable citizens who are trying to get a chance. And I just wanted to say thank you to all of you and thank you to Mr. Kingston, who mentioned it in the briefing, for bringing this up.
Thank you. Mr. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. So when I was at DISD, I always had to fight to keep the ESL program there. But when I left, they got rid of it, which I thought was a big mistake because they were educating the parents at our rec centers. I even worked to get more of these classes in our rec centers, and it was free to the city. So I know that there's another provider now who has that contract. I'm not sure who it is because I don't know if it's the Workforce Commission or if it's the Dallas County Community College District, but they're always looking for, and they still contact me, and they're always looking for space to hold these classes. And I don't know how many of our rec centers have them or not, but that's another way to provide these services if we go ahead and partner with the person who has the grant. They just need the space to provide the teachers. I don't know if you guys know who has that contract now. I know it's still around. I just don't know where they're at. Because they just contacted me maybe a few months ago about Samuel Rand. I told them I don't work there anymore.
Certainly there are a number of other providers out there that provide these kinds of classes, including the Dallas County Community College District. And wherever anybody has any courses and they need space, we can work with them. Be that as it may, we still know that we have a waiting list.
Okay. Also, so if there's a way that you can partner also with the recreation centers, I know that a few of them have that, but there are other funding sources for ESL. We just have to go out and partner with them. So if we can actively go out and do that, we wouldn't have to do this today. Thank you.
Thank you. I also want to put in a plug for the Aberg Center. They're a great ESL and GED group. Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mayor. And everything that Councilmember Kingston said is so true about poverty and how helping people move out of poverty is part of also helping people learn the English language and get into a situation where they can get a good job. Nevertheless, I have two concerns about this. One is to echo Ms. Arnold's comments about I don't want to limit the new city attorney budget-wise. I want to make sure the city attorney gets in there and helps us figure out what is the right budget there. But secondly, and almost more importantly, there are so many poverty needs in this city, including, for example, something that I've lobbied for frequently, which is senior citizen home repair for some people that just cannot even afford to repair their home to stay in their homes. There are so many needs, and I don't want us to fall victim to just the recency effect. The most recent thing we heard is now the thing that comes up with a budget amendment when we're at this stage in the game, because there are many things that we have denied. Like expansion of senior home repair, like some of the homeless amendments that came forward, like the full ask that we're getting in DAS, we're funding a partial ask. I mean, there are just so many needs in our city. So
Let's not fall victim to that, but let's make sure that we get ESL into the budget the following year, actually after Mr. Clayton, I think, sorts out CDBG, home, ESG, and HOPA, our entitlement grants, because I'm not sure, but it's likely that some of this ESL funding can come from our entitlement grants that we get from the federal government, and we'll let the housing folks speak to that when the time comes. So, yes, a good program. It's kind of late in the game, and I just don't want us to fall victim to the fact that that's just the most recent thing we saw.
Thank you, Ms. McGue.
Yeah, Chris, could you come to the mic? Chris Bowers. Can you help me understand and or quantify what this $160,000 would do actually to your budget, or how this, where it'll come from, or what changes will be impacted because of it?
Councilmember McGue, that is very tough to say at this time. I won't be the one making those decisions, but I would expect that you would see delayed hiring of vacant positions and just not filling positions in order to make budget.
Okay, because we've been operating, at least at some of the higher levels, short-staffed for a while, right?
True.
Is it enough to make up that difference, or...?
I don't know enough at this time to be able to say exactly, you know, how the office would deal with cutting the budget by $160,000.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm extremely supportive of the ESL we have in place. I think we need to expand the program, but I'm uncomfortable with the source of funds at this time, and I was hoping to have a little bit more clarity, but I don't think we have that at this point. So I think a department that we're asking for change, and we're asking for implementation of changes, I just don't think why we would immediately try to handcuff the opportunity and the way they could do that. So.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan had spoken on this, and then we'll come back around second round.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I have some issues with this as well. I mean, I love the idea, and certainly I have a very large Hispanic population in my district, and I just feel like it's a little bit 11th hour. And I would also join Mr. Kleinman in thinking that I think we have a lot of funds in the CDBG category that could be utilized for this very thing if we'll allow ourselves to reprogram some of those dollars. I know there's probably grant opportunities out there. A lot of grant money sits in foundations. There's no ask. I think if we put together a grant, we could probably easily come up with this $160,000 by doing that. So, again, if it would have been a little bit earlier, I think I would have supported it. I certainly would support. I know Mr. Clayton and Mr. Klein are going to work together to consider reprogramming dollars. We would love to get not only that amount of money, but perhaps even more money in the next year, maybe to the tune of $250,000, if we'll allow ourselves to let go of some of the sacred cows of the past. We throw money into a lot of different areas, we're never going to ultimately solve the problem with any little pot of money, but we can do a lot of good by moving the needle around a little bit, give some of these other groups an opportunity to have some funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold?
Yes, I did want to follow up, and I will support the statement that was made with Mr. Kleinman and Mr. Callahan. The source of funding, I think, is very troubling for me. I will continue to underscore that. But also, we need to have the time to reevaluate our focus in terms of literacy. You have some other areas as well, and my background is education, almost 40 years strong. So I do understand the needs for ESL, but I also understand the basic needs, some other basic needs of the fundamentals of reading and writing, and even as it relates to the individuals who are here in this country, just learning how to speak and write in English effectively. So there are some other programs we need to undergird all of these individuals so that as we give our 2 cents on different initiatives in this city as it relates to education, we are strengthening all populations. And so I want to make sure you all understand that piece. I understand fully
the whole program and the impact of ESL, but it's the funding source that we cannot afford to cut. Because as I stated earlier, we have some areas that we need to address and hit hard. Chapter 27, the blight, the code that our constituents continue to ask for. So that will continue to be my position, opposed to taking this money from the city attorney's office and allowing the new city attorney to come in to give us his input on the use of the funds that will encourage him to reach his goal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
Mr. Bowers, what percentage of the city attorney's office budget is $160,000?
I don't have a calculator with me. I'm going to defer to management on that.
I'm being a jerk, Chris. Sorry. It's 0.009%. I mean, to talk about 110 to talk about 110 lawyer office having operational deficits from a cut of $160,000 when we know, every one of us knows and has talked to senior members of that attorney's office who says that it is not running efficiently. We know that people are going to leave with the new city attorney coming in. This is an absolutely painless cut, and to pretend that there's an operational problem from a $160,000 cut in a $17 million budget is kind of funny, except it's not funny. It's sad. It's sad when those people are going to be waiting for ESL. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, I want to reiterate, I think this is, the ESL program is a good idea, but the source of funding is what I have issues with. I think that it would help us to, or encourage us to be able to look for more public-private partnerships maybe, or other sources of funding or grant programs to be able to offset these type programs. And as I said before, we'll continue to reiterate, we keep talking about CBDG funds and how we can reallocate those sources. I just want to make sure that we're just not blindly reallocating sources, that we understand the ramifications, long-term ramifications of those allocations. So as we look at how we go about structuring those, please keep that in mind. Keep that in mind in that. Under no circumstances will I support anything that's of a blind nature or a knee-jerk reaction to reallocating funds for one reason or another. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kleinman?
I just wanted to ask Mr. Kingston or someone else, $160,000, how many people do we expect this would get them to proficiency?
800.
$160,000 would get 800 people proficient in English?
We less than $200 a student. This is the best bang for the buck you can get in anti-poverty.
SSL class. If I can learn Spanish for $200, sign me up.
Okay.
It's a little bit more expensive for Spanish, but I can hook you up with Spanish House in my district.
Okay, that's great. All right. show of hands for people that want to put this in the amendment, in the budget. Three, four, okay. We don't have eight. Thank you. Ms. Alonzo, you have the next amendment.
I won't bore you all, and you all have spoken very well, but I think the source of fund is where it's coming from. It's not any. It's not going to hurt much, so I ask for your support.
Okay. Any comments or questions on Ms. Alonzo's? Okay. Show of hands.
Oh, my light is on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I looked down there. I didn't see it.
Oh, that's all right. I'm going to continue to reiterate the need for the city attorney's office to function in the manner that we expect as citizens. Oh, you're going to different funds. So let me read. Maybe I need some lessons. General fund. Let me move to the general fund. I think at this time to try to reconfigure a program. On the library level, I'm still waiting for my memo to come so I can make sure. But I think we all have to tighten up. And if we and to reconfigure that curriculum at the library so that we get the best bang out of our for our money, continuing to put that money, leave it where it is, because there are some other needs that we need to undergird. And so I will not support this particular amendment either, because I think it takes time to develop a program that has some effective elements to it and not just throw the money out just because so that we can say we have this program. And as an educator, I can tell you it does take time to design an effective program with limited resources. And even at $200 a student, that's quite a bit to ask. So I'm going to just reiterate the need to take time and not just throw this money here at this time. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You obviously have support for ESL on Wellness Council. But this source of funds, I mean, we need to grow it and have it sustainable. You can't keep going back to the cookie jar. It's, you know, it's not a, for programming and operational costs, so I can't support the source of funds.
Thank you. A show of hands that people that would support this. Show of hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, didn't make it. Okay. Thank you. We are not, Mr. Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Wilson.
I do want to say something.
Yeah, please, please.
All right, Mayor, thank you. I want to first say that I'm going to withdraw this motion, but still I want to advocate for the option of the $700,000 for the creation of programs such as innovation. Sorry, my braces are getting in the way. Entrepreneurship. These are programs designed to be able to help Neighborhood Plus programs. We went to a trip in New York and saw where they were doing it quite effectively. I think that, but I'm encouraged by our new crop of VISTA representatives that have the qualities to be able to help us begin to go down that track. But I still am advocating for the infrastructure for our areas that need sidewalks when it comes to public transportation. We know that's an issue to help individuals get back and forth to schools safely. It's breaking my heart where I have individuals in my community that are making dangerous treks to school for lack of sidewalks. I will continue to advocate for that and for red lights for those areas that we have in our districts to prevent needless accidents and injuries, not only of property but of lives lost because of red lights and cameras. So I want to continue to advocate for that, but I will withdraw this amendment.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Next, we're going to go to Mr. Callahan's. Mr. Callahan, will you please explain your amendment? And colleagues, just so you'll know, because the mayor wants to be present as well, so...
Well, as many of you know, we've had a concern about, you know, dipping into reserves and or exploding the tax rate. So this was an effort because we were moving so quickly the other day to arrange funds for police and fire pay. I felt like that there was some cost savings in some of the other budget categories, some of the other line items. So that's where I basically pull. So mobility in streets, $100,000 because we're going to have a bond campaign in May. Sustainable development construction, the historic preservation, that can be added to the applicant, you know, for anybody who wants to apply, so those funds could be made up there. Management services, reduce the Center for Performance Excellence for $300,000, and then Office of Financial Services reduce the grant administration by just $100,000 for $2.1 million of savings. Obviously, we've now circled around the McGew Amendment, which I think pleases our uniform personnel, and we were able to generate some cost savings there. But I would still ask you to go along with me here to I don't think that $2.1 million is going to kill any of those specific areas there. I think these are smart cuts. There's $3.1 billion out there, folks. This is only $2.1 million. So I urge you to support it so we can further reduce the increase in our taxes. You've seen the clarion call throughout the county that the people, they're beginning to hurt. We're getting to the pressure point on these tax increases. So We haven't had as much drama here at the city level, but the county level, there's clearly been that, as well as mail out. So I hope that gets our collective attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callant. Mr. Clayton, I truly apologize. Yours was the next one, so please accept my apology, and if you would explain your amendment.
Sure. Do we need to vote on his first?
We're waiting for the mayor, so that's why I was asking you all if you would present your amendment. I mean, just present, describe your amendment, talk about your amendment, and then we'll be coming into the vote in a minute. Yeah.
Sure. Well, thank you, Madam Mayor. You know, obviously, we just had the conversation about ESL. The two biggest short-term wins that we could address coming out of the Poverty Task Force was adult ESL and teen pregnancy. Two of the biggest drivers to stay out of, you know, out of poverty is get a high school degree, don't have a baby before 21. It's facts. One of the things that the mayor said when we were doing this presentation that I really took to heart, which is why I want to address it now, is not to make the issue of poverty a political issue. You know, we go through this budget process and you say, well, what are you going to cut to make this happen? And I really, again, appreciate everybody who's wanted and has talked to me about what can we do to address this issue. So I tried to say, okay, where could we actually spend this money? And keep in mind, colleagues, you budget your priorities. What you spend money on is what you care about as a city. So the elephant in the room, obviously, is Fair Park. And depending on your agreement, you know, your viewpoint on that, either you love it, you dislike it, whatever. But, you know, the areas that are going to be most affected by this are in Southern Dallas. It's not my area, but it's in West Dallas. It's part of North Dallas, but primarily in Southern Dallas. As I looked at the Fair Park Foundation in 2017, you know, when they have a full year to go and go after this, they'll have about $20 million, an increase of $20 million. I'm asking for 1%, which is $200,000 to go towards this initiative. And then I went out of the PIO's office, not because I dislike the PIO, but because we've already done a straw vote where we're saying we're going to bring it into the council office. So it's prioritization, and it would have been easy to say, we'll just take it out of the general fund, but I felt like we needed to prioritize, and it is okay, if it's okay whether we agree or disagree on the Fair Park Foundation to say you're not going to be efficient from day one. It's okay to get 95% of what you want, or in this case, 99% of your budget. So that's why I proposed it for this program that will allow us to go to an RFP to get a $300,000 media buy in resources to actually address teen pregnancy at a city level. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Callahan, did you want to speak on this item?
I want to speak on that item.
Okay.
Please. Yeah, I would, with all due respect, Mark and I have kind of worked separately on this item to try to bring about some difference there. It just didn't bubble up on the radar screen until very late in the game. But I will assert to you that my district, particularly in 75217, has got one of the largest, you know, teen pregnancy problems within the city. I've known this for 20, 25 years. We had a federal grant that was utilized through Spruce High School a number of years ago until those funds were no longer available. But this is a very challenging problem that really leads to, you know, intergenerational poverty. So I think that we need to do that. I do have a problem with the funding sources here. And I would, at this time, I would like to offer, I don't lack friendly amendments, so I'm going to call it a substitute amendment, to reduce those funds to $100,000 for the teen pregnancy issue, and the funds be taken from the general fund. And then next year, reprogram funds from the CDBG funds to the tune of that $350,000 request. And to be clear on this, we're getting federal funds already. There's already a substantial $1 million programming money is available, but we need extra money to be able to make this thing all come together, and that's the reason Mr. Clayton is asking for that $350,000. So I hope you'll join me with $100,000, which will help the $1 million, and then next year we'll get more through reprogramming the CDBG dollars. Thank you.
Okay. What are you wanting us to do? I mean, are you wanting Mr. Clayton to agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. Then talk
to him. And we've talked about that already, so whether or not he will agree is altogether a different matter.
All right.
But he's thinking
All right, well, let's other people talk, and then you'll come back to that. Mr. Clayton, I'll let you have the last word. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To avoid repeating, I agree with Mark on this. The thing I wanted to point out to this body is that we have wasted a lot of balloon juice on anti-poverty efforts. And I have heard many of you speak on anti-poverty efforts, and we have not funded crap. We have not put any money where our mouth is. And frankly, I believe that this body, as a result of its majority votes, has been somewhat hypocritical with regard to fighting poverty. This is a chance to start changing that. Thank you.
I just want to make sure the facts are, did we fund income tax credit funding last year? Did we or not, Jack? Maybe we didn't. Maybe I'm wrong.
Mayor, yes, it's
fine. Okay, that is okay.
Okay.
It's in this budget, too. Okay, got it. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to clarify this PIO. If I could ask the PIO department what that would be cutting, because I do not believe that amendment that was passed that we enrich the council offices when we're asking city manager to reduce his back office, but I think that's already been incorporated in there, right? And it didn't come from PIO. It just I forgot what those sorts of funds were from.
Senator will speak more directly, but in general, there was a lot of workload that is up that has not been satisfied with regards to outreach with the council office.
Right, so we added two.
Added some money.
But where did that money come from?
Well, it was just
tax rate.
It was tax rate. Yeah, I mean it's just overall presentation of the budget.
But it was more than the tax rate you put in your city manager's budget, right? I don't know how we absorbed that cost,
yes,
and I didn't think it came from the PIOs.
No, it did not.
So what would this be doing?
So this would cost our office two positions, including a Spanish-speaking PIO.
So we would lose our Spanish-speaking PIO?
Yes, that would cost us two positions.
Two positions. And this media buy, typical media buys, do they get RFP'd out of your office?
What happens with us is that because we have deals with vendors such as Clear Channel, we actually get free billboard space, free kiosk space. For a lot of the educational campaigns that we do, we don't pay for them. That's how we make it work. We only have about $25,000 to play with.
So could you work with the Poverty Task Force and be able to try to provide some of these services
Absolutely.
Without cost?
Yep.
So we're kind of cutting the office that's doing this work. Okay. Thanks, with the source of funds.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Gates, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say, isn't this kind of cutting off the office that provides the service that we're trying to request? And let me just be clear on both this amendment and, I guess, the friendly amendment or the amended by Mr. Callahan. I just want to just reiterate and just say no. Just in case you missed the space in between the N and the O, just kind of blow that together. No.
Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Young.
Yes. While I also agreed that as we saw the report of the Poverty Task Force that we do have issues as it relates to poverty in the city of Dallas. My concern is, one, the source of funds, because it obviously uses funding for a project that I do support, so I will not be supporting something that is pulling funds from that. But then, two, my question was going to be to Councilman Clayton and, I guess, to PIO, and it's just around not even the media buys with the billboard with Clear Channel, but we also do we not have options for PSAs with radio stations that we could be doing some kind of campaign that are free?
We definitely can. I'm happy to meet with Terry and with some of the council members who want us to address this, because there are several opportunities available to us, being a government entity, to allow us to take space on radio stations, potentially on TV channels, on our cable channels. We have WRR as well. So there are definitely a lot of opportunities that we can build into the campaign.
Right. And so I'd like to see us utilize some of those efforts. I would, however, support in the future some type of amendment or as we look at next year's budget, something that is more tangible in helping us deal with some of these issues, not necessarily a media buy, but something that really helps us with tackling the issue of poverty. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. I have a question for Mr. Clayton.
Please.
Mark, on your $200,000 from the Fair Park Foundation, is that $200,000 out of the $7 million that has been put into the budget in case we go forward with the Fair Park agreement? Is that where that's coming from?
I think I looked at it more from the standpoint of what the total budget was, which, according to Mr. Heumann's presentation, was just under $20 million. So I thought somewhere in the couch cushions that we could find 1% of the $20 million. Because I know there were increases. I have it in front of me.
I think we put $7 million, Mr. Manager. Didn't we add $7 million to the budget?
Yes. That was an additional amount, and I think Mr. Clayton's referring to the base that was already there plus that $7 million.
So, in other words, coming out of that operational amount of money that Mr. Heumann was requesting, would you be open to leaving the $100,000 in the PIO office and just making $300,000 taken from the Fair Park Foundation agreement?
Absolutely. I don't think it'll pass, but absolutely.
Well, I would vote for that.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Griggs.
Thank you. So on this public information office, the service decrease, the $100,000, we would lose Spanish capabilities to speak with our Spanish-speaking population. Is that correct?
We only have a few PIOs, and only one is fluent in Spanish, so that we can have our collateral translated and our information translated into Spanish.
We probably need more than one. My other point would just be a pro tip for AC and staff. There's a budget amendment made, and staff's against it. Say the cut's going to go to Spanish-speaking, the elderly, or poverty. It's a good way to shift the discussion. But actually, in the PIO office, we should have more than one person who speaks Spanish here at the City of Dallas that's capable of translating. We at least need some redundancy, because sometimes people get sick or on vacation. So for the next budget, you could look at that. That would be a great improvement to our PIO office to have two people that know Spanish. Thank you, Mr. St. Andrew.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold?
Yes, I will just support Mr. That comment. I often need, and my Spanish is un poquito, so therefore there's often times where I need this expertise, not just through this office, but through some other departments when we're out in the field. But in this case, because I know the heart of my colleague from D9 as it relates to this issue of poverty, but I also want us to understand that poverty is larger than just this feature that deals with pregnancy. I think when we begin to look at the city's responsibility and culpability here, I believe the city has failed to address some of the underlying causes that contribute to poverty and this cycle that continues to keep us, number one, on the map as being the city with that honor, or if that's what you want to call it. But it seems not to bother us, because oftentimes we spend quite a bit of our energies giving money to and allocating money to a lot of vanity projects that doesn't lend itself to building the infrastructures that our constituents ask for, that also leads to developing better schools and other resources that will enable many of these individuals who have oftentimes not been, in their opinion, and in some of ours as well, as we look on the outside looking in, they haven't had a fair shake, an opportunity to move up.
because it's almost as if the system is designed and engineered that way, so these individuals will never ever be able to come up. So the city does have a responsibility in this whole in this cycle of poverty, but I'm once again investing in the communities, the infrastructure, the schools, pushing the economic development that draws the population so that these individuals who are left out will be able to come in. And oftentimes, all of what I just described continues to support gentrification. And as we continue to push people out of their neighborhoods, and we'll see that oftentimes, for example, you'll see those individuals in the lower income bracket being pushed out, because then our eyes move to that particular neighborhood, because now we realize we can have a profit off of the backs of the poor, and we continue to move them further and further and further down the road. So there is a responsibility, and we need to take a little bit more time. And Mark, Mr. Clayton, you know I'm committed to working with you on this initiative, but it's going to take all of us to look in the mirror and ask ourselves, how much are we contributing to the cycle of the perpetuation of poverty as we continue to overlook the cries of our constituents when they ask for schools and roads, and we continue to give them all of these amenities that have nothing to do with the quality of life in that community. So I can't support the funding. Mr. Callahan, I kind of got lost with what his amendment was, but I can't support Fair Park Foundation subtraction, and especially without talking to colleague Tiffany Young. Thank you.
Thank you. Just as a process check, reminder, I feel a lot of passion around this horseshoe in regards to poverty, and I want to make sure that what we've said is that we're going to take many of these initiatives, come back to quality of life, and have them bring us back agendas that they want us to move forward. So we're still going to do that, and I just don't want to forget that. This is a very ironic point of view, because I'm not going to support it because it's not enough money. Okay, this is a huge, huge issue that we face, and we got to do this big time. And I just don't want to spit in the ocean and kind of check the box that we did something. And so I'm just looking at this amendment. So I'm with you 100%, Mr. Clayton. You know I am, and I want to come back and say, how do we as a city attack this, raise private money, get media companies with us? We hired a media company, and it took forever, the RFP in this place. And by the time we spent $250,000, I think, it was like nothing. And so I want to. I just don't want to check the box and say we've done something, and we really haven't. So that's why I'm not as passionate about it. A lot of people are giving you advice, Mr. Clayton. What do you want to do? And then we'll show our hands.
I feel like I have 14 wives. So. I'm just saying she's lovely. That's all I'm saying. And I have learned to listen to her. And obviously, this meeting isn't recorded. So, thank you, Mr. Callahan. I'm going to withdraw my amendment. And I would like to say this. Again, you are what you budget. You know, we will come back to quality of life. We will come back to CDBG. But I think you also have to understand about CDBG that it needs to be more efficient. But it's also federal money that comes back to us to help our most vulnerable. So we're going to spend money that's already there on our most vulnerable and redirect it. And the $300,000 that came to us from the teen pregnancy folks was their ask, which is why I did it. And that was the basics of what they asked for. So I'll just withdraw it. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Callahan, have you already done your you talked about your wives out?
Okay. I have.
Did we vote on it?
No.
Okay. So any questions or discussions on Mr. Callahan's amendment? Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor. I will always support any amendment that looks at reducing the budget so we can reduce the tax rate. So I'll be supporting Mr. Callahan's amendment.
Okay. Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mayor. While I appreciate that that motion, Mr. Kleinman, I cannot support it for the simple fact of the Center for Performance Excellence, as its creation has done a great job in terms of identifying cost savings and savings for current budget and as we go forward. So I won't be supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, a show of hands that would support Mr. Callahan's amendment. We've got three. Okay. Thank you. That one won't make it. And lastly, Mr. Griggs' small arts organization.
Well, I would like to propose a budget neutral that we support our small arts organizations. It's not only the big arts organizations that make Dallas great, but some of our small ones, and they've got needs also, just like we did for the Children's Theater a few years ago. And so I would like to add some funds for small, non-city-owned arts and cultural facilities for a grant program to help them with their needs, since they're a big part of our ecosystem here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mayor. Just had a question on this. Is this thing that we're going to forego maybe roof repair, AC, foundation, carpet, or anything like that in lieu of programming? Is that the way I'm reading that?
If the source of funds is major maintenance, then yes.
Okay, so we would rather have a leaking ceiling while we're performing whatever program that we have, or a poor electricity connecting or a poor generator providing service versus the programming that we would put in the building?
Exactly. We have a needs inventory of our city-owned cultural facilities of almost $7 million currently that's been accumulated, and it includes a lot of critical needs such as bathroom repairs, electricity upgrades, lighting, basic AC, roofs, in okay. facilities.
No.
Thank you. Ms. Grayson.
Yeah, let me just ask a nitpicky question here. This amendment came in on Monday, and didn't we see something from the mayor's office saying we had a deadline to submit amendments?
Go ahead.
I was generous and accepted this one. My bad.
Well, that means that the rest of us can ignore deadlines and bring things in later. I mean, I just want to know what the rules are.
I got it. Hold on. What Mr. Kingston reminded me that there was only 4 hours to get it done by the end of the day on Friday. Okay, and so there were a couple that came in on Saturday. Mr. Griggs sent in on Monday morning, and I could have not entertained it and decided to. So,
I thought that was nice for the mayor to give us one business day, 4 hours for some of us who are out of pocket on Friday afternoon without access to email, to get something that something's due in 4 hours. So it's always nice. That was very nice of you, Mayor, to give everyone one business day to get it turned in. So we really appreciate that.
Ms. Grayson, I'll tell you, if everybody really stuck to my memos all the time, I would just be, my feelings would be hurt, but they don't anyway, so, you know, so I.
If we stuck to it, your feelings would be hurt?
This would be a rare occasion, but it doesn't seem to be, so we're going to do the budget process differently next time. Okay. Thank you. Ms. Young.
Two questions. The first one on the budget neutral, the city-owned cultural arts facilities, what facilities would be affected?
The list of the city-owned cultural facilities includes that need major maintenance, include the African American Museum. That would obviously be impacted by Fair Park, Bathhouse Cultural Center, Black Academy of Arts and Letters, Dallas Theater Center, Kalita Humphreys, DMA, Majestic Theater, Meyerson, South Dallas Cultural Center.
Okay, and then on the, I don't know who, if this question is for Councilman Griggs or for you all, on the ad funds for small, non-city-owned arts and cultural facility grant program, who does that affect? And how would that program be administered? Is that something the OCA would administer, that grant program? And who potentially does it affect?
I would think OCA would run it, and any small cultural and arts facilities that aren't city-owned that need capital improvements. This is just like the program we ran for the Children's Theater a few years ago, where they were a beneficiary. So we've got some we've got needs all across for the arts.
Now okay, thank you. I just wanted to know who it would affect. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mayor. If we could look at budget amendment, I think it's number two, came from the city manager's office where it says transfer to cultural affairs, $98,747. Does that not address this same need?
That is on top of, so it is hotel occupancy tax money.
I know where it's coming from.
As we briefed it to Arts, Culture, and Library, is to use it to increase awards to culturally specific organizations so that we're consistent with our cultural policy.
So how's that different than Mr. Griggs' amendment, the use of funds?
Well, this use of funding would be for programming, and his, as I understand it, is for facility maintenance.
No, he's taking for facility maintenance. More? Oh, I'm sorry, putting in small facilities. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. So how many small facilities do we have? What ones do we have that this would
There's be? Actually only four. We're not sure where the line is being drawn in this definition for small, non-city-owned facilities. But if you use $1 million, which has traditionally been used, there's only four organizations that currently own their building. Many of them are in rented or even donated
spaces.
And
what are those four?
TECO, Anita Martinez Ballet Folklorico, the Creative Arts Center, and Theater 3.
Okay, so it's not this money wouldn't be open to all. I mean, this is it's geared at several. This is an example of trying to take maintenance and just deferring it down the road. It becomes somebody else's problem, and we can help. I can't be supportive of that. I mean, we continue to do that here at the city with our streets and our infrastructure and our buildings. And the needs are too great to be able to refund those, to reallocate those at this point. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold.
Oh, yes. I'm trying to follow along here. I do want to support those programs, and I think we all realize that because of the AT&T proposal, you do have some of the smaller arts who are also fighting to survive. And so that's part of where I think we are. I think maybe the troubling the source is troubling for some, but I think in what we're hearing in all fairness and to bring about equity, there needs to be some focus line item to those small non-city-owned arts and cultural facility grant programs. Now, I don't know that I can think fast enough to offer an amendment, but I believe that if we are moving in the direction of giving the support to the larger program that these individuals too wanted to be have a chance to be a part of this budget and continue to add to the value of the communities in which they serve. And so I do want to support the funding, but Mayor, at this point, because I know you've given that memo, I would have to think real fast to find an alternative source as an amendment. Is that true?
I won't be entertaining it unless okay. There are eight other.
Well, could I make a I could make an amendment to just take it out of the general fund. Ms. Jennifer Gates is saying no. No. So I guess we'll have to just vote it up. I voted up or voted down, but I do know that we need to address this issue of those small, non-city-owned cultural arts facilities. And Mr. Griggs, unless you can think of an alternative real fast, I don't have one at this time, other than the general fund. Do you want to take that amendment? Let me just hush because that came from you. So let me just cut my little red light off.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Griggs, did you want to close or say anything?
I think it could be a good program. We've got a lot of facilities that people rent that need help that are part of our cultural facilities, smaller facilities that people own. Both these facilities are part of delivering the arts and culture, particularly outside of downtown Dallas and the Arts District. And it would be great if we could help them because they're an important part of our city as well. Thank you.
Thank you. A show of hands that would support this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, so we'll put that in the budget. Okay, that ends this section of the show. And because of that last amendment,
Mr. Mayor, I have a motion.
Just a second. The finance needs just a little bit of time to do some work. Please, Mr. Kingston.
Mr. Mayor, I move to amend the budget to withdraw the additional $1.5 million to ATPAC and move that money into street services.
Okay, I can't entertain that motion.
I appeal that ruling.
Okay. All that want to entertain a motion, show of hands. Okay. Motion fails.
May I be heard on the point of order, Mr. Mayor?
Please.
I'd like a parliamentary ruling from Mr. Bowers about whether a presiding officer can refuse to entertain a motion from a member that is on the topic that has been noticed in the agenda.
He can.
What is your rationale there? I've combed through Robert's rules all night last night and most of this morning. I can't find anything sustaining the authority of the presiding officer to restrict a motion on an item that's been properly noticed.
He has made a ruling. He gave notice that he would be making this ruling earlier. That decision has been appealed in accordance with Robert's Rules of Order, and the decision of the chair was upheld.
I just have to say, Mr. Mayor, this is horrible practice. This is anti-democratic and reduces debate unnecessarily. We were unable to see how the effect of these amendments was going to play out and to reduce the ability of the body to make changes before adopting the budget, it simply violates the spirit of Robert's Rules of Order. Mr. Bowers' analysis, I simply cannot agree with. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. And so since you're disagreeing with my point, let me just make sure I'm clear with everybody about why I'm doing it. This process has been going on for months. And it is not fair to citizens, it is not fair to the council, to lob in amendments at the last moment. If anybody wanted to take that amendment earlier, it should be out there. We should be, transparency is very important, and to put it in at the last minute, I just don't think is fair, so that's my judgment. I appreciate your point of view on that. Thank you.
Mayor? I just wanted to make a comment. You know, he certainly has the right to appeal the decision of the chair, and you gave him that right to do so. Had others joined him and overrode your decision,
that's
then
the way
that would have taken precedence. So he's had a fair opportunity by Robert's Rules.
Thank you. Okay. So how long do you guys need?
At least 30 minutes, please.
Okay. Let me just see how we're going to do this. No, there's a process we've got to go through here. We will go ahead and let's start. Let's take item 8 up, Ms. Rios. That gives me some time to kind of think about this.
Agenda item number 8 is authorized number 1, a consulting contract for actuarial services related to the Dallas Police and Fire Pension System, and number 2, an increase in appropriations in the amount of $414,000 from $56,671,112 to $57,085,112 in the non-departmental budget. Deloitte Consultant LLP. not to exceed $414,000.
We got a motion from Mr. Griggs. We have a second. Second. Any discussion? Ms. Gates.
Yes, this was briefed in BF&A, and this amount was not recommended. We recommended a different amount, so I would like to put another motion on the floor.
Okay.
Out of BF&A, it was recommended that we not exceed, I believe the amount was 207.
That's right.
207, $207,000. And I have comments if I get a second.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
The motion is second. Ms. Gates.
Thank you. When we briefed this in BF&A, we discussed that some of the, they've gone over their allotment of hours Deloitte has in determining the actuaries related to the police and fire pension, and we understand that, that they need to be compensated on that. These are numbers that the city is using for very important decision making. But the other $200,000 is money that's been allocated to look at actuaries related to combining the ERF and also the police and fire pension system. Those hours are what was budgeted, which was requested not by the city manager but by a few council members. And at this time, I don't think that's prudent use of funds until it's outlined and understood by the council all the other hurdles that would have to take place before that could happen. And I think that that's information that hasn't been shared by the attorneys with us. And if that's even legally possible, is before we go spending more money down this rabbit hole, money that actually the police and fire pension could utilize.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Griggs.
The police and fire pension system, everyone knows we have a large challenge with this before us as the city of Dallas. Right now there's a number of possible solutions that have been proposed, a basket. And if anyone has a possible solution, let's add it to the basket. We're looking at everything from legislative fixes to possible mergers, what can happen with a membership vote. Even people have proposed closing the fund and incenting a new fund. All these solutions, we don't know which one's going to work, but we have an obligation to examine all these solutions. And we need to engage Deloitte. Some of them aren't going to work. Maybe they'll bring about new ideas. But we got to do the work now because this is a massive problem that needs the city of Dallas's attention, and we've got to get in front of it with some analysis. If we wait, it may be too late to look at some of these solutions. Some of the solutions that have been put in the basket probably aren't going to work. But we've got to look under every stone, and if anyone else has an idea, let's put it in the basket and let's start running the numbers and looking at it. This situation is getting so critical. The liability of the fund is so big that we're not at a position to debate right now just $207,000 to look at some more possible solutions. Because we've got this ship, the Dallas Police and Fire Pension System, the ship's got more than a $5 billion hole in it. And it's taken on water. And we got to start looking at everything. And so that's why I will not be supporting this. I'll be supporting the original motion. The extra money, I know Deloitte went over initially, but there was such a time crunch to get this data. Because we need, here's why we need Deloitte. There are independent, they check things that come from the pension system and give the city an opinion on the numbers. We need that. We remember what the old days were and some of the data we were getting from the Richard Tenenbaum administration over there. So we need an independent check, and they started the first actuarial examination, the first audit. We need them on board, and now we're shifting from a position of confirming how bad things are into possibly looking at solutions. And that's why we need this full amount. We cannot wait around, and probably how this works that comes from them. Other ideas will come from council members, if they come from citizens. We got to look at everything. And certainly now is the time to look at everything to get in front of it. Right now is a point where there is not a bad idea. Things are getting that desperate. So if you have an idea, let's find out what your idea is, and then let's get the professionals to run some numbers and look at it. And hopefully if we look at enough things, with these numbers, we will come up with a way to save this pension system and to actually also save our bond rating. I don't want to think what Moody's and Standard & Poor's are going to say if our pension system goes under and our police and firefighters. So we've got a lot at stake here, and I would encourage everyone to vote for the entire amount. The situation is that critical, and we've got to look at every single idea. If anyone else has any other possible ideas that could possibly work to save this system, please let us know. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't believe that this money can be used by the system. It's general fund money. It has to be used by us. The other issue is this. It's not simply going to look at one solution. It's going to look at least four solutions that we asked Deloitte to take a look at. The reason it's important is because without knowing what the effect of those changes are, we can't advocate for them. We're going to be presented, really have already been presented, with a proposal from the system. The system's actuaries refused to look at least two solutions that we brought up because they're not popular at the pension system. So in order for us to be able to effectively advocate for those, if they in fact are effective, we need to know the numbers. The other issue is the one that Mr. Griggs raised, is without these funds, we are left in the unenviable position of trusting every number that comes out of the pension system, and we've seen that history shows us that that is not necessarily a good idea. So I would also encourage us to spend this money. Ms. Gates' warning about, you know, what the future of the pension system is well taken. It's just that if we don't do this, we essentially will be creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I'm not necessarily opposed to eventually maybe considering spending the money. It came at the last minute to Budget, Finance, and Audit, and I would just like to be briefed and vetted, and as Mr. Griggs mentioned, run some numbers. Let's see what those funds are going to be necessary for. Once there's a full understanding, perhaps the committee might go along with it, but I think it was kind of force-fed at the last moment, and for that reason, I cannot support it. But going forward in the next month or two, if we get a briefing, I get everything laid out on the table, I might reconsider. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mayor. I, too, was a bit taken back about the amount and the increase on it, but given the severity of the pension, I do think that is our best interest to identify all options available to us as early as we can to try to stem this tide. Of course, this change isn't an overnight change. It's something that takes time. So I think the earlier that we can get notice about it, we can make a better decision on that and have better options in terms of going forward. So I agree with the opportunity to be able to identify other options.
Thank you. Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mayor. And I agree with Ms. Gates with regards to we have to see where we are and what the city decides they want to analyze moving forward. I do think that the option that Mr. Griggs and Mr. Kingston are advocating for is a worthy one and one worth analysis. But at this point, I don't think we're quite ready for that. The other piece that I'm really concerned about is at this late stage, 9 days before our new budget season, it requires us to pull this funding out of contingency reserves. And if we even just delay the decision on this component of it and put it into next year's budget, we can do that without reducing our reserves. We can find it in another place in the budget. So at this point, I'll stand by the recommendation of the Budget, Finance, and Audit Committee to reduce the amount requested.
Thank you. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would just add to that, I don't disagree with what Mr. Griggs and Mr. Kingston have said. Everything should be on the table. We need to have all the knowledge, and we've got to have city knowledge. But there's been what's the committee called, Sustainability Committee? I don't sit on that. That is part at the city. It's looking at options. And I would just, if they recommended that we take on this, you know, the $400,000, but I'm not sure if there was a recommendation from that committee. Could somebody address that? And that,
Mr. Kingston.
If you don't mind, Mr. Please. What I'm trying to tell you is that the pension system will not recommend this. They don't want us to look at a couple of things that we've asked Deloitte to look at.
And so that is a pension subcommittee. So I guess they haven't recommended that. But has the city manager and the city, I mean, are they recommending that we look at this now from a city's perspective?
We've had Deloitte looking at a lot of things.
Right.
And really have asked them to cast the net far and wide in terms of options. There has not been any action from the pension board with regards to this and some of the other pieces of information that we've had Deloitte actually
right.
looking at.
So do you think we should be spending $400,000 at this point? I mean, I'm not...
You know, I think the way it's been described, except I would even make it even more dramatic in this situation, because the numbers are absolutely huge, and it is coming up on the situation with regards to our legislative session is coming up
delaying it so we could have a footprint of so a legal opinion either by the ERF attorneys or by our attorneys that this could even be done. I mean, why? I just don't. There's again, it's coming out of. And you know, a fund balance, and if it has to be done at this time. But I think we could go with half of it at this point and reevaluate and get some more opinions before we go forward.
As a suggestion, it might be a way to get there is just having, if you will, a fatal flaw analysis that is done by the attorneys to see whether or not it even makes at that level.
If it's legal.
If
yeah.
it's and if it can get past that review. That hopefully could be done quickly if there's the authority to then move forward.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to you bringing it back within a few weeks, but I just think it's a lot of money to take out of reserves, and it could potentially maybe somehow get fit into next year's budget.
If I may, this is not a fixed-price contract. This is a contract for which we order the hours, essentially, and then pay for them. So this is a limit based on an estimate of hours, and so I would be happy to commit that we would not, you know, spend it for this purpose until we have that analysis. If that would make you feel more comfortable with having the full amount now, just so that we're able to move quickly when the time comes, if
and
the analysis comes back.
And then, right. If there's right, that's a good compromise. So we could go forward with the full amount. I mean, that's not what the committee recommended, but I guess I could.
Are you withdrawing your amendment?
Yeah, I mean, I could amend it to, I guess, if a committee member has a problem with it, they voted against it, up to this amount. But just if you could move forward on that analysis that's described by AC related, if they say there's no reason, you know, then let us know. Keep us notified of this amount.
Okay. Thank you. So the motion is withdrawn. We will entertain Mr. Griggs' motion, where it was. With that stipulation, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. Okay, what we're going to do is, let me have my little piece of paper there, Chris. We will move into executive session and then we will be back here at 1:00. We will take up the budget and finalize the voting on that and the tax rates and the like, and then we'll move into the bond briefing for this afternoon. So, and Council, what I recommend is you stay here, and we'll get through this. It is 11:16 a.m. on September 21, 2016. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters. Noel Ortega et al. V. City of Dallas, Kelvin Walker v. Amy Wilburn, legal issues related to the Dallas Police and Fire Pension System, and under Section 551074, personnel matters of the Texas Open Meetings Act to discuss qualifications and candidates and appointment to the City Attorney. Thank you. Okay. It is. Okay. The City Council has completed its closed session under Section 551071 and 551074 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, and at 1:05 p.m. on September 21st, 2016, we have returned to open session. Okay, we've got a quorum, so we'll kind of move ahead with these things. We will pick up at item number 3. I will have Ms. Rios read that in, and then Ms. Reich, if you can kind of summarize what we did, okay? Ms. Rios.
Agenda item number 3 is final reading and adoption of appropriation ordinances for the fiscal year 2016-17, City of Dallas operating, grants, trusts, and capital budget.
Thank you. So, Ms. Reich, kind of tell us what the work that you've done and what we will be voting on.
Yes. So this is the full budget, $3.1 billion. It does provide resources for public safety. So it is hiring 449 officers. It is increasing pay, double step increases for everyone, including for that top step who would not have otherwise received an increase. They'll get 5%. And it is providing for streets and infrastructure, as well as code compliance that I discussed earlier, notably $2.7 million for animal services to address loose dogs, homelessness, and many other issues in here that we have discussed. So at this point, that is what this does.
Yeah, but it was the McGue budget that had unanimity on it, right?
Yes.
And it included Mr. Griggs' small arts organization amendment, which got 8 votes.
That's right.
Okay. With that, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to move for a floor amendment, so it's different than the one that's posted in our agenda. It's what you just discussed with Ms. Raich. It is to this number 3. It's based on the straw votes. I approve to move item number 3 with the following changes. So the operating ordinance, page 1, section 1, you change fire to $254,602,513. Page 2, section 1, change the police to $478,003,576. So 478003576. That's the number.
I want to second that.
Hold on here. Like, you finished?
No, I'm not. Not.
Here, let's let her.
Okay.
Let
capital
her.
Ordinance, which is page 6, paragraph 7, strike out the words "city-owned" before "cultural facilities." That's the amendment that you're referring to with Mr. Griggs. That makes that possible. So these are. This is from our discussions this morning, making those changes into the ordinance.
Ms. Alonzo?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to second that motion, but I just wanted to make sure, because she said 254,000 as opposed to 254 million. So it's a point of clarification.
No, 478 million.
Page 1, section 1, change fire to 254,602,000.
Right.
Point of order. Is there any way they can put this on the screen so that we can give us a copy?
That's a very good
point. Hold on. That's why I asked Ms. Raich. Yeah. What do we vote? What did she just read?
She just read that fire would change to 254 million. Is that what you're looking for?
No.
No. She just read that we would adopt the city manager's budget with the McGue amendment, with the Griggs Arts amendment.
And but this is technically how you have to do that. You have to amend these numbers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
we could have passed out. We could have had it. Maybe a copy for everybody.
Okay. Well, we saw the amendments this morning. Okay. Why is she having to read it this way? That's why everybody's asking the question.
Because it's posted differently. It's posted before. The ordinance is posted with the old numbers, and we took those amendments in, so now the ordinance has to reflect those amendments.
All right. So
and all Ms. Young is saying she'd like to see it in writing. So we could, before, we could get everybody a copy of what the...
Hold, stop. We're getting a copy, okay? So we're going to sit here and...
Take a breath.
Okay. Yes. Well, you know what? While we're getting this, is there any discussion?
I have a comment.
Please, go ahead.
I mean, my only comment is I'm going to be supportive of this. I understand there's things in here that I might not particularly agree upon, but I think it's important that this was done in the spirit of compromise, and I think it's the best for the city of Dallas to have a balanced budget, and so I will be supportive of this amendment and this current budget.
Okay.
That's all my comments.
What is the Xerox machine? Or? That's what I was kind of. What did you guys do for those things this morning? What did you change?
How it's written on page 3. I mean, on a post-it.
So it was just all you did was just change this, or did you change the attachment too?
There were changes being made to the attachment.
Got
these
it.
Are the changes that need to be read in.
Yeah. Do you have attachment? No, I know, but she's saying just visually it's okay with her. Do we have it?
It is on page... the ordinance, that the way it was written, is page 3, yeah.
Will we just make enough copies for some people? Here we go. Okay.
Do you want? I can read it again.
No? Is everybody reading it? Okay. Any other questions or thoughts? Discussion. We've got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The budget is passed. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, we require a record vote.
Okay. Well, can you just say, everybody said yes.
All right. All council members voting in favor with the exception of Council Member Arnold, who is absent when vote taken.
Okay. Thank you.
Agenda item number 4 is an ordinance setting the tax rate at 0.7842 cents per $100 valuation, which includes 0.5618 cents for the general fund and 0.2224 cents for the debt service fund, and levying ad valorem taxes for the City of Dallas, Texas for fiscal year 2016-17.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. The floor amendment to agenda item number 4. This has been changed from how it was posted because of the budget. This tax rate now reflects the budget we just adopted. So in accordance with the budget, I move to approve item number 4 with the following changes. Page 1, section 1, change 0.7842 to 0.7825. Page 1, section 1A. Change 0.5618 to 0.5601. Page 2, the bold language at the top of the page, change 8% to 6.67%, and $41.60 to $39.90.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
And then I have to read this required language
okay. By
law. I move that the property tax rate be increased by the adoption of a tax rate of 78.25 cents per $100 valuation, which is effectively a 4.47% increase in the tax rate. So.
Okay, thank you. Discussion. Ms. Grayson.
On this required language, when it says it's effectively a 4.47% increase in the tax rate, that means over what the city manager recommended in his proposed budget?
No.
Explain.
Sure. So that means that if, and I'll explain maybe first what that $41.60 to $39.90 means. If your home were valued the same this year as last year, for every $100,000, your tax bill would go up $39.90 is what we're now saying. So that's the 4.47% increase. Now, of course, people's values change, so that's not going to be the case. But for that's a rule of thumb for $100,000 of value. So to your point earlier, we are bringing in more revenue, even though we are lowering the tax rate from what the rollback rate would be.
Right. This just seemed kind of misleading. We're rolling back the tax rate from, and yet this says we're increasing it.
The effective rate, because our effective rate
the
would have.
Effective rate.
That's right.
That's it.
It's that's right.
Still, I mean, we're rolling it back a little, but this makes it sound as though we're increasing it. I mean, it just
because values are going up.
Okay. Mr. McGew.
Hey, Mr. Mayor, I just also wanted to clarify and make sure that we are able to do this based on the amendment that we put forth, but still requiring AC to follow through with this on a meet and confer agreement. I just want to make sure you understand that we're still going to hold you accountable in that regard.
Thank you, I think. yes, I heard very clearly that the council is very interested in getting a meet and confer contract back to you in the next month or so. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gates, you want to
say? Thank you. Staff has asked me to clarify on page two. I think I may have misread it. I think I corrected myself, but just to be on the record correctly. On page two, that language is 8% to 7.67%. And then my comment would be, I understand the reason for the required language is because we are collecting more taxes. So it is the revenues up, but we are, just so the public understands, the current rate we have today, we are lowering. We're not lowering it all the way to the effective rate, but we are lowering the tax rate today, which I don't – do we know the last time we lowered the tax rate?
It was before Ms. Grayson and my time.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. No, we haven't done it since for the last five years. So, and I know it wasn't done, and it was raised in 08, right?
Correct.
So it was.
And we are lowering it lower than the rollback rate, which is a goal. So.
Thank you, Mr. Kleiman.
Yeah, just a point of clarification on the effective tax rate. If we had maintained the effective tax rate, would we, by statute, even have to be having this tax rate change hearing?
I have to look at the city attorney's office.
If we made the effective tax rate.
If council adopts the effective rate, then we would not have had two public hearings. We wouldn't have had to run the advertisement in the newspaper. Certain laws kick into play if you exceed the effective tax rate.
To Ms. Grayson's point, the reason is an increase in the tax rate. It's an increase over the effective tax rate, which effectively means everybody's taxes would have stayed the same.
Correct, but we still did slightly reduce our tax rate, and I don't want that to get lost in this conversation.
I think it's confusing because this language at the end is required by state law. We cannot alter it at all.
We know that, yeah.
You know?
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, Mayor, I just want to also offer a point of clarification. When we engaged with the Alonzo Callahan Griggs amendment, that really was creating 0.7842 was what the rate was. AC's budget, city manager's budget, was 0.7812. Now we've adopted and accepted the McGew amendment. That has created a compromise, so it's 0.7825.
If I may, as a point of clarification, it was not the Magoo amendment that changed the tax rate. It was two other amendments. It was the $1.2 million for Dallas Animal Services, and it was about $138,000 for the two staff members in the city council office.
Okay. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate my colleagues sort of clarifying yet again for the citizenry that the state of Texas requires us to pretend that we are raising taxes when, in fact, we are cutting the rate. And I've very much enjoyed responding to the hundreds of emails I've received in the last couple of weeks from citizens who have been told that we were considering a tax rate increase when, in fact, this council has been unanimous that it wanted a tax rate decrease since the beginning of this budget process. So that's been an awful lot of fun, and I certainly appreciate all the people who spread the misinformation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
No problem. I don't think I did that, but it's fine. All right. Hearing no more comments, it is time to vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And Mr. Kleiman votes against.
Mr. Mayor, again, there's a record vote required. 14 council members voted in favor with Council Member Kingston voting no.
Correct.
I mean, Kleiman.
Okay. Thank
Sorry,
you.
Council members. Kleiman.
Okay. Let's go. Item number five.
Agenda item 5 is a resolution ratifying the increase in total property tax revenues reflected in the fiscal year 2016-17 budget.
All right. The floor amendment?
Yes, Mrs. Gates.
The floor amendment to agenda item number 5, which reflects the tax rate that we just adopted, is I move to approve item number 5 with the following changes to section 1 of the resolution. Everybody check me, make sure I'm reading these numbers right. $66,117,860 to $64,241,271. 8.27% to 8.03% and $19,886,186 to $19,843,077.
Thank you. Do we have a second? Thank you. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Again, Mr. Mayor, historically we do a record vote on this item. All 15 voted unanimously in favor. Thank you.
All right, item 6.
Agenda item number 6 is an ordinance amending chapters 2, 15D, 16, 18, 48A, 49, and 51A of the Dallas City Code to, number 1, adjust stormwater fee structure, number 2, adjust emergency ambulance transport fees, number 3, adjust fees for operating private ambulance service, number 4, adjust fees for vehicle tow service for vehicles parked on private property, number 5, adjust vehicle immobilization fees, number 6, adjust permit fees overseen by the Dallas Fire Rescue Department, number 7, adjust fees for the sanitation collection service and charges for disposal of solid waste materials. Number 8, adjust rates and charges for treated water service, wastewater service, wholesale water, and wastewater service to governmental entities, untreated water service, service connections, and fire hydrant usage. Number 9, adjust fees for certain inspections. Number 10, add fees related to development impact review decisions. Number 11, add and adjust fees for miscellaneous items. Number 12, add fees related to a sign permit in a special provision sign district. Number 13, add a fee schedule for property description reviews. Number 14, adjust fees for engineering services. And number 15, make certain conforming semantic, grammatical, and structural changes.
Thank you. Ms. Alonzo. Motion is second. Any discussion? Skate your lights on. Thank you. Do you want to speak?
I have a question.
Please.
Thank you, Mayor. I know we've briefed this several times regarding the change, the way we're evaluating permeable. This is that ordinance, correct? The way we were determining the permeable and non-permeable?
Yes, ma'am.
So it And I know it's been designed to be revenue impact, but it is going to impact people differently. But in general, it's going to be revenue neutral. So I'm supportive of it. I think it's a fairer way to evaluate these charges. But I would ask one, and I think we've kind of tried to educate the public and got this out there, but I think when people's bills change, they're going to have questions about it. So I've just asked that we continue with that PR related to this. And then two, if next year, can we have and I guess I could bring this back to budget, finance, and audit, and an evaluation of this to make sure it really did stay budget neutral. So on the record, I'd like that done. Is that okay, Sarah? Is that any comments?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. We will continue that. We also have set up an additional call center feature that we're helping fund with 311 for additional questions. And we have an FAQ we'll get with each of your councilists go over it so that they've got some additional information going into
it. Because I know we're going to get calls and questions about it. So if we can get that out, we can push that out through our sources, too. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item number 7 is authorized number 1, position changes. Number 2, approval of civilian salary schedules for fiscal year 2016-17. Number 3, merit pay increases for civilian staff effective November 9, 2016. And number 4, implementation of a double merit step for all uniformed police and fire officers.
Mr. Lonzo motion and Eric seconded. Any discussion? Ms. McGue.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I just want to confirm or ask the city manager as it relates to number 4, what is the impact of the implementation of the double merit steps after my amendment on your meet and confer discussions?
Your amendment sets out some certain provisions in terms of what you were trying to accomplish. With respect to merits, any change from the current contract that is in place would not be able to be put into effect unilaterally, i.e. by us, the city, until after April 2nd. So that's another reason why we need to see about getting this meet and confer agreement to a conclusion so that we can bring it back or take it first to the membership of the police and fire. Hopefully have them approve, bring it back, and then at that point you could have an early implementation of this overall plan.
And you have the resources to do either way, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. I will make a comment that while at times our citizens might think that city government is rocky and we twist and turn. We pass budgets here at the city unlike our federal government, okay? And I want to congratulate everybody that participated in this. And a balance. Thank you very much. Yeah. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that the single biggest job of a city manager is giving out a proposed budget. And in a horribly difficult budget year, this wasn't a horribly difficult process. And I want to thank you, Mr. Manager, because I think you gave us a good budget. And, yes, we tweaked it, but I think you did a great job, and I want to say thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. With that, we'll take up item number 9.
Agenda item number 9 is consideration of appointment of Larry Irwin Castro, Jr., to the position of city attorney, adoption of a resolution appointing Larry Irwin Castro, Jr., a city attorney, approval of the terms of the contract, and authorization for the city manager to execute an agreement of appointment of the city attorney.
We got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. All right. We move now to briefing B. Mr. Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mayor. As we move forward on getting our planning done with respect to the 2017 bond program, we had earlier conversations about the overall size of the of that bond program. We are now this afternoon going to give you some additional information about some of the specifics that might be included, and then also to have you participate in giving us some indication on how some of those dollars that you've set as a limit might be appropriated into the various components of it. So I'll have Jill drill down a little bit more on that, and then we'll begin.
So you all gave us a challenge, and that was that you wanted to pick the size of the bond program and the size of the propositions and what propositions during the August time period. And it's September, so we're going to call that August as well. So last time we got together, you all went for the $800 million program. The question on the table is over what duration. That was one of your questions last time. So does it last 4 years to 7 years? And the briefing gave some answers and looking at those in the appendix. We also answered in the appendix some of the questions that you all had from that first briefing. Today we're going to focus on the propositions, and we're going to review with you all the needs inventory as it exists today. Let me remind you that we'll be going out with public input sessions in each of your districts in early October, so the needs inventory is an ever-changing document, and it will continue to be modified as we get additional input. After Rick gives the briefing, we have an exercise for you, which we hope will be fun, but it's a way of for you all to see kind of where each of you stand in terms of what the propositions might look like. And we're going to tell you what the exercise is so that you can think about it as we go through the presentation. You're each going to be given $800 or $800 million. We're just going to delete the zeros on this. So you're going to get some money, the $800. And we're going to have some buckets, and you're going to put it in the street bucket or the drainage bucket or the library bucket based upon the information that you all see. Now, some of you have said, you know what? I really don't want a bond program that big. And if that's the case, you can turn your money back into the banker. And if, on the other hand, you want to do more than that, we've got the banker, and we do have capacity. As you all know, we could have a bigger bond program. So you could go get more money, and we'll keep track of those who go to the bank and get more money. And if you got really crazy and you wanted to increase taxes to have an even larger bond program, you can go get additional money, but it's red money. And so we'll know that that is a tax rate kind of increase. So as Rick goes through this presentation, be thinking about how you think the money should be divided into the different propositions. We'll have that information. It's just something for fun, but it'll give you all a sense of where you all are with respect to the different propositions, and we'll be happy to answer questions about it and then let you all put it together from there. So, Rick, take it away.
Thank you, Jill. As Jill mentioned, I'll be talking about a little bit on the bond propositions, followed by the educational outreach on the bond program. Slide four. The city maintains an inventory of all needed projects, and these are continuously added to this database, this inventory. At about the time now that we're preparing for a bond program, we start comparing that list with master plans, long-range plans, citizen input, council action plans, and we start to prioritize projects that we will be then recommending for the bond program. Projects in the needs inventory are separated into groups. We just mentioned them, called them propositions. And examples are, for example, street proposition. It would be streets and transportation. Everything related to that goes into the streets and transportation. That would include traffic signals. That would include alleys, sidewalks, bridge rehab, and, of course, streets. And for parks, it would be, say, playgrounds, recreation centers, and so on. And so we'll have different propositions. After input from council, we select what propositions we want to include, and the projects that will be included in each. Keep in mind, however, that propositions that we would have like propositions or like projects for each of the propositions, but the money cannot be interchanged between propositions after this is completed or approved. Council has voiced a concern over needs and wants. So to help with this, what we did was we broke down our projects based on whether they're new being something that has not been built before, or major expansion, very important, that will increase operation and maintenance costs, or rehab or replacement. And this is these are projects that we reconstruct, remodel, rehabilitate, that do not increase operational cost, maintenance cost, and major maintenance, projects that are performed, major repairs to that just to help the existing infrastructure last longer. Slide 7 is just an example of how we broke down some of those type projects. And we'll move on to slide 8. On slide 8, it's a chart, and it's got the various propositions that we've had in the past. And next to those, these columns, 2006, how much we actually invested in those propositions. In 2012, same thing. And then we have the needs inventory columns. Again, broken down by new, replacement, and major maintenance. And what the needs inventory is in for each of those categories, again, for each of those propositions. In the next 12 slides, 9 on through, we list a general description of the needs propositions per category. These projects' descriptions are high level in general. Please know that starting next week, we'll be giving briefings to various committees on the details of those needs inventories. So this is high, 30,000-foot level, just brief description. You'll get the details later on. So starting with streets, transportation proposition, under the rehab major maintenance, we have a need of about over $3.6 billion. And it's just some of those categories. To achieve a zero degradation, we're estimating about $89 million per year to achieve that. Important point here is we broke it down by 22% reconstruction and 78% resurfacing. That's the proportion. Remember, reconstruction costs about 5 times more than a resurfacing project. Reconstruction is for failed streets. To increase that by 1%, it would be an additional $103 million. And now we're talking about a 50-50 for resurfacing reconstruction. Why did we do that? Well, because you start running out of resurfacing type or D-type streets to do this. So we need to then dive into those failed streets to reconstruct, and those cost, again, a lot more. Included in those, in that 3.6, is there are alleys that we need to reconstruct, quiet zones, traffic intersection improvements, rehabilitation of bridges, and so on. For new projects, on slide 11, needs are exceed $1.9 billion, and we've got those type of projects that are listed. For flood protection, storm drainage, we need about $39 million for erosion control and another $480 million for bridge culverts. You can read the rest. Parks and recreation, $187 million for new rehabilitated trail and rehabilitation of trails as well. $109 million to rehab rec centers and so on as they're listed. Slide 14, on September 1st, Parks and Recreation Board by straw vote selected $320 million option of what is needed for the Parks and Recreation bond program proposition. And those included community, neighborhood park projects, recreation centers, and so on, along with an aquatics master plan. They also desire to have a separate proposition for Fair Park. We'll move on to slide 16. Fair Park, there's a request for $242 million for major maintenance and rehab, and about $69 million for community parks, underground parking. The proposed Fair Park agreement is also here referenced, and they're listed. We move on to slide 17. Important point on this particular slide is the facilities or the infrastructure associated with our facilities is quite extensive and quite large. And by the industry standards, we should be spending anywhere from 34 to 68 million. The fact is we're far below that. Just to keep up, just for that standard, we would need an additional $17 million to keep up with it. And I'll give you more details as we proceed. On slide 18, for libraries, we need about $102 million for library replacements and renovations and $9 million for a new library. Cultural facilities are listed on slide 19, and they include $45 million for the Asian Culture Center as well as the Latino Cultural Center. Court facilities lists they're listed and they're again they're being worked. These numbers are being worked on, and this is for the replacement of the municipal courts building, detention centers. Economic development lists about $15 million for new projects, also those projects including in South Dallas. Housing lists about $30 million. They're listed. Fire facilities list $171 million for 19 fire station replacements, $55 million to construct three new fire stations. Police facilities, $13.4 million for replacement and expansion of facilities that include the security upgrades at Jack Evans and other stations, $144 million for the design and construction of a new police academy. Move on to slide 24. City facilities include building replacements for code compliance, EBS, sanitation, streets, and three new facilities for code and sanitation. Now we will address, pretty much completed those needs inventory. We're going to talk a little bit about educational outreach in slide 25. And we wanted to discuss and mention to you that we do have a website that we've launched last week. And along with that, for educational outreach, we'll have, again, two rounds of public meetings in October and January. And we'll be conducting online surveys, use social media. They're listed. Important part is the informational website. It will contain, of course, and it does contain the latest information on the bond program, city needs inventory, street conditions, much more. You'll be able to take your surveys using that as well. Slides 27 through 30 are just the different type pages that you can find on that website. I won't go into those in detail. I'm sure you'll thank me for that. And on slide 31, we're just going to talk a little bit about those public meetings. The first round of the town halls will be from October 3rd through the 20th. And that will be to receive citizen input on what should be included in a bond program, followed by a second round from January 4th through the 20th. And it is where we will present the city manager's recommended bond program and receive input on that. Online survey tools will allow citizens to input without attending a town hall meeting for the bond program. They'll be able to do that from their iPhone, from computer, or just follow it as needed. And communication through our social tools will consist of those there listed, including Facebook, Twitter, and so on. Slide 33 kind of gives you a date, the dates for the various council meetings that we have, including the committee meetings, the needs inventory that I just mentioned, the town hall meetings, and we'll pretty much be wrapping things up hopefully by February 8th with the council call for elections. With that, then I'll open it up to questions.
Thank you. Ms. Jordan, you wanted to do something after questions?
Yeah, if you had kind of technical questions about this information before you put the money in the different boxes, this would be probably a good time to get those kind of questions resolved.
Okay.
Otherwise,
great.
We will distribute the money.
There are a couple of questions, so we'll go to Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you very much for this information. I was looking at the responses that you guys gave. So on page 86, please. Clarification.
That doesn't look like the page I'm looking for.
86. There we go. Okay, so excess property, say we'll, in the whole city of Dallas, we only have $5.7 million, or is that supposed to be $1 billion in excess property?
No, that's $1 million. So, I
so
mean,
like the property of the library property on Forest Lane that this DCAT has on for $1.8 million makes up a third of the entire excess property in the city of Dallas?
I mean,
Mr. Kingston, we have identified.
My name is Kleinman.
I'm sorry.
We've identified approximately 25 properties that have either been declared a surplus or that could be possibly declared a surplus.
Okay, so maybe what I was asked for is not clear. I'm looking for properties we're not using.
So the properties that I just list are I just identified are the ones that either have been released by departments that we're currently working on to declare a surplus.
Maybe I just need to work with the property department to clarify what I'm looking for, which is properties that we're just not using. And I realize that if a department has their grubby little paws on a piece of property that they won't release to you guys, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not a surplus property. It just means the department won't let it go. So I believe that there's a lot more than $5.7 million of property in the city of Dallas that we're not using. And so maybe that doesn't qualify as the term surplus property, and I just don't know how to drill down into that information.
We can certainly provide the list that makes up the 5.7.
No,
and
it's the list of stuff that's not on the 5.7.
Exactly, and that's what would identify the properties, and then we can have that conversation with you.
So then, and then provide me a list of every single property in the city of Dallas, and I'd go through them line item by line item and ask you, Jill, do we use this one or not? Are people employed at this property? Do they have jobs at this property?
Well,
is that how we're going to do it?
Well, it sounds like you already have an idea of properties that you think should be on the list.
Well, I have one or two, but
right.
I mean,
well, but there, you know, there's
how many properties does the city of Dallas own?
Well, we've got over 800 buildings, so given the number of sites, it's
in excess of 4,000 parcels.
In excess of 4,000 parcels, and how many are on this 5.7 million?
25.
So we've got 3,975 parcels of land that we have active use on. All right, I'm sorry. I'm just really confused. Are we using 3,975?
I said no.
Okay, so I'm not clear on what difference between surplus properties and ones we don't use this.
Okay. So as you characterize it a little bit differently, there is departments which have properties under, if you will, their control in which they're not currently using but have future plans where they might be expanding or think that there might be a use for it and not ready to declare it as surplus. There's a number of properties that that I can think of over at Hensley or at properties on I-20 and on 45 that are acreages of property which have been identified as possible sites for future substations or things like that. So there's a lot of properties that are in the planning mode for our future, which would not be utilized today, but something that the departments don't want to give up on.
So they're hoarding.
They're planning.
Okay. All right. Maybe we just need to do a better review of this stuff because I think that, you know, coming up into this bond program, we're going to ask people, the citizens, to spend a lot of money to develop a lot of projects when we're just camped out on value. And when I mean camped out on value, there are properties out there that have value, especially in a high market, which we are in a very high property market now, that maybe we could actually get a lot of these assets on the ground that we're trying to construct by releasing some of the value and monetizing some of these surplus property, or I don't know what the right word is, unused property, inactive properties. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Alonzo.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On page 19, can you tell me how you came up with 45 on the new? If you have that now, I appreciate it. If not, if you can get it to me, I'm just trying to understand. Page 19.
Zaida, I don't know. Do you have the estimate between the Asian and the Latino phase two? That $45 million is made up of those two numbers. We'll dig it out for you and hand it to
okay.
you.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. And so this right now we're contemplating AC an $800 million possibly bond program. Do you have any strategic thoughts on if the next coming years, if we're able to reach some type of compromise on the Dallas Police and Fire pension system, and that requires some funding from the city of Dallas, how we could pull back on this bond program after we have the vote or otherwise adjust it if we have to put an influx of cash into the system?
If you're talking about if there was capacity here with regards to bonds being sold to help address a pension situation, the bit of information I've got has been that is not necessarily a strategy that we would want to undertake. If that's
I agree with that. I'm not interested in pension revenue bonds. I think they're too risky. The rate of return we have to pay on them, it's too risky.
And I'm seeing it a similar way.
But then understanding that we've got one pot of money.
Correct.
And out of the pot of money, we pay for debt service.
Correct.
And then we pay for just running the city. And so our debt service payments we have to make or we default. Unless we can stage them or work something out. So we do have to put in influx of cash into the pension system in the future. Then would that come from the money that otherwise would operate the city?
Yes, it would either come from that or increases in taxes in order to make that happen.
And that gives me pause about going forward with a full $800 million bond program at this time. We can always do more bond programs. I would be much more comfortable with a $500 million one to give us some capacity than in 2-3 years after we've resolved the pension issue. Then we could come back with another one, or we would be in a position to go ahead with the pension system and put some possible cash into it. My concern with such a big pension, such a big bond program at $800 million is that the Dallas Police and Fire pension system does require an influx of cash. We'll either have to dramatically lower city services or increase the tax rate. And so that's why I would prefer to have a little bit of caution here and do such a big program in two steps, initially only $500 million. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll come back. I'll make my comments in a second, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I agree with Mr. Griggs. I would caution colleagues not to spend this money in your head before we see if we actually can do it. I don't want to be alarmist, but we're in a tough spot. Can we go to 10, please? Rick, you and I started working together on what the state of the streets were back in like September of 2012. I think I spent more time with you talking about streets than I've spent on any other single issue in city government. What is the number to achieve zero degradation in the streets?
We're looking at spending 89, in addition to what we're funding our streets department now, we're looking at spending $89 million on capital type projects.
On capital?
Yes.
Okay. Let me go back over my recollection, and maybe we can correct my memory, or I don't know what happened. Last year at this time, we were going through the manager's proposed budget, and there was a slide that you put up, Rick, that showed that with the anticipated 2017 bond package that we're going to have like 2 years of net degradation. Our streets are going to get worse for 2 years, but then we were going to turn the corner and they were going to start getting better. My recollection is that the mayor reacted negatively to that, and I think rightly so, to say, can't we spend enough to just stay at net zero degradation? Not that no street is degrading, but that on an average basis we're not getting worse at a city. My recollection was that the manager then put forward a plan that accomplished that, and that the number for that in the budget that we put in last year was approximately $90 million. Is that about right?
Well, for the year that we're coming into, so for 17, the number is at about $133 million, and that includes money from Dallas Water Utilities for their contribution.
You're running just a little ahead of me, Jill. Let me focus back on 15-16. What was the total number that was supposed to prevent net degradation in the streets? I'm almost sure that's right around $90
million. That sounds about right.
Okay, so this year, Mr. Gonzalez very smartly came, because he could see that the council was the same, came back and said, okay, to accomplish that same goal in fiscal 17, we need $135 million. How is it possible that we funded enough street maintenance to remain at net zero degradation, but the number to remain at net zero degradation went up by a big margin? Did we either not deploy the $90 million, did we not understand how bad the degradation was, or do we today not understand how bad the degradation is?
Well, one thing is,
if I might interject first, in terms of this current budget, and Jack, don't go too far away, in the current budget, the amounts that we had with the whole program from different funding sources was $123 million. And so the plan for this next year is 132. So there is an increase, but it's not the order of magnitude what you're talking about. Now you can answer.
And with respect, I'll answer the question about the rate of degradation. So we're continuing to learn more about that rate and measure it. One of the things that we have seen since we started talking to council about 2 years ago is that the rate of degradation is higher than we thought, so that right now it's almost 5% falling into unsatisfactory condition each year.
So does that response, Jill, imply that last year when we set a number that was a net zero number that we were wrong?
We planned for the year that we're in, 16 and 17, for the same lane mile of treatment. So we caught it for the year that we're in and this next year. So in both years, we are fixing, to use that word, about 565 or so lane miles. So we're flat in terms of the
lane miles. If we were flat last year, why does it cost more this year? That's the basic question.
We're fighting inflation, and then we're also trying to do a better job of repairs and being more thorough. So we're looking at our techniques that we're using, and we are trying to do more base repair to some of the work that the street department has been doing,
such that we hope that it will last longer. So you're fighting inflation, and we're trying to improve the techniques that we're using. And then in terms of the bond program, remember that we're having to anticipate forward inflation plus the cost of administration of the bond program plus public art funds. So for the moving forward, that you're seeing the amount that we need every year increasing, and that 89 is an averaged value for a four-year bond program.
Another factor that is discussed when we're visiting about this is that not all street repair is equal. And you can have street repair that helps to keep the system going that is on a per linear foot basis cheaper than other types of repair, reconstruction, or complete replacement. And so as we get into different parts of this program, it's not going to be the same cost necessarily to keep up.
Okay. Well, I mean, my point is that we're kind of batting around this policy of until we can deploy bond funds to improve quality of streets, we want to expend general funds at a level that's sufficient to make net degradation zero. And so I think y'all have swerved a little bit, really, on what that number is. And there could be reasons for that, but we just need to know what those are so that we know how reliable we think that information is. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Just again, as I mentioned the other day, I was talking about, you know, if we have $325 million of parks outlay, and then let's say we go ahead and do the Fair Park $75 million, that's $400 right there. So it only leaves us $400 left over to do the rest of our business. And I guess my first question would be, how much street maintenance should we be shooting for? I recognize we can't just jump out and kind of deconstruct the entire city and try to build it back. We've still got to have mobility, so we can only do so much at one time. So what would be the right figure that we would want to shoot for?
So roughly for a four-year bond program, it'd be like $360 million. So
okay. Basically
the soundbite I've been using is basically half of the bond program is needed just to keep things even. If we extend the bond program out and have a longer duration, then that number needs to increase. So for every year you increase it, you have to increase the amount. And then remember that that is only dealing with street condition. It doesn't deal with alleys, sidewalks,
traffic signals,
all the other kinds of things. So there are a lot of tough choices. And when we start to actually pick projects, I think what you all will see is that you all have needs in your district for projects that don't necessarily help towards improving and maintaining condition.
Yeah, so if you do that quick math, folks, and those of you watching at home, that's $760 million right there. So then we have to do everything else if we want to stay under $800 million. So that's a real challenge, I think, for us. And I know a lot of us other have plans, goals, aspirations in the southern half that have been neglected and ignored for a long, long, long time. So there's just no money left. I mean, I'm of the camp and of the mindset that we want to stay in that $800 million range because we want to do more pay-as-you-go. I think, with all due respect to Mr. Griggs's approach, you know, if we go about that way, that means just I've got to wait even longer. And everyone knows I've got the worst streets. I think Ms. Gates says the second worst streets. So how much longer do we have to wait? So that's the problem that I have with that. So we're going to have to do some severe soul-searching and maybe even reconsider our number. That's one thing. To do nothing, you know, 500 is not going to get us there. But, I mean, I have a lot at stake in that $325 million on the park side, just so you'll know. I don't have a signature park. You know, Pleasant Grove doesn't have one, never has had one. Every quadrant of the city does have one. So for me to get there, I've got to basically sign kind of a blood oath, if you will, that 325 to be able to get the things that we've worked for and we've already got master plans for. So I don't know how we answer that question. Mr. Kleinman actually might have part of the answer because we do have a lot of buildings, a lot of property that we set on. Yeah, planning, Mr. Manager, is okay, but perhaps we as policy guys, we need to come up with a set of regulations and kind of put the city on a stopwatch. You know, if you're going to develop that property, you're going to use that property, show us a strategic plan, open the crystal ball, and let us peer in to know. I also want to caution all of us that the more buildings we build, the more we got to maintain. And that means more roofs, more air conditioning, more. Guess what? We're doing a horrible job with the buildings that we've got. Take a look at Fair Park if you need any evidence. And then we've got Arts District. You know, we've got deferred maintenance over there. All over the city, we build buildings. They're beautiful. Some even leads and silver and all that. But we're going to have to get new roofs on those one day. Every district has got vast needs. And I don't know how we're going to pay for all this and then continue to do. It's an irony that we appear across the country to be one of the most affluent, wealthy cities, and we are in a boom economy. We're at the top of the market in the real estate business. And you would think things would be better, but depression or recession was created a new normal that none of us really could plan for. So we need to be real creative and real fine-tuned with our pencil, get it real sharp. But, again, as Mr. Kleinman said, I don't want you to think he's a lone wolf because I think we have a lot of very valuable property in the North Dallas area that we're not using, and we might be able to find a more lower-cost solution for libraries, parks, et cetera, by going to a different location that's not quite as in demand. We might sell those more valuable declining assets. Somebody else might build a building. We'll put it on the tax rolls. Imagine that. Take something off the city, you know, ownership, and put on the tax rolls. That's a unique idea, but that might be where the gold is, folks.
Thank you. Ms. Fleming, you've talked, so I'm going to hold you. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. What I want to speak specifically about is the education outreach component. There are a number of people that live in citywide, but specifically in the southern part of the city, are older. They're not on social media. And I think online surveys are a great way of getting information. But will we be able to get copies of those surveys, and can we email those out to our constituents?
Yes, and that's one reason why we're doing the town hall meetings. So it'll all be the same survey, whether it's done through social media or through the town hall meetings. So hopefully we'll have all generations covered.
Yeah, because you'll have people who will come to the town hall meetings who will just sit there and won't say anything, but if you have a survey,
right,
they'll fill the survey
right
out, and we can get that information. Even if they're unable to make the town hall meeting, we can get that information out,
right,
and they can complete that information. I think looking at the needs inventory, especially in my district, this is looked at, and I don't know how it is in some of my colleagues in the council districts, but this is looked at almost as an opportunity to get some things that they've wanted for a long time done. So I'm, you know, kind of looking citywide and also looking district-wide. I'm looking from two different points of views when I think in terms of the size. I'm respectful of what Councilman Griggs talked about specifically in terms of let's focus a smaller bond package on the streets, but I have to go back and I have to explain to my constituents why when they want 15 parking spots at Twin Falls Park, for example, why we weren't able to give them a $60,000 worth of parking spots. So I just want my colleagues to be mindful of, as you look at things specifically in your district, some of the same needs that we have that are a little bit different as we're deciding on the size of this bond package. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Wilson hasn't spoken.
Thank you, Mayor. I just had a question going back to Councilman Kleinman's request for properties that are not, or how did you put it, properties that are being considered or properties that departments are holding?
Right. So there are some properties that, you know, we're holding. Dallas Water Utilities buys land because they're going to be building a pipeline across the way, or properties that we're holding in the Trinity because we're putting the whole forest together. Or, but then we have the properties that I think he's really getting at of maybe it's an old fire station site and we've built them a new one somewhere else. So why do we have that old fire station site? And I think those are the ones that he's really looking for. And I think we'll be able to kind of hone in on those once we see the list that is the 5.7 that's already been declared surplus. I think we instinctively kind of know a lot of the sites that, or at least Public Works has a feel for the ones that, you know, we've done replacements. So here's one.
Right. Especially if there are facilities that can be repurposed for something else that may have a better
fit.
Well,
and, you know, quite honestly, that's been a challenge for the city because a lot of times we've wanted to, you know, sell a piece of property and a nonprofit will come forward and say, oh, please let us have it. And so, you know, a property can have a new life. And I think that's part of this tension that certain departments feel about their property of not wanting to give it up because they might need it for a sister department to do something else with. So.
Right, and just piggybacking off of Councilman Callahan and Thomas' comments about the southern sector and just understanding that, you know, it's almost to the point to where that, well, I think it is to the point that we probably should have our own little bond package to be able to get the infrastructure that we need to be able to help become I've always said this, a bigger portion of the tax base. If we're 15%, then I think we should put forth the effort to become 25, 30, 45. I think that'd be a novel idea. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll insert myself here before we go to second round, just a couple of things. First of all, I agree with that strategy. And so in this process, would you just look over the last three bond elections and make sure we're clear about where the money's been spent and where it hasn't spent from a district standpoint? Can you break it out that way?
Yes, we can. But please do remember how we handle things like libraries and fire stations. They do not get counted against district totals. We say that they are citywide assets. So you'll see the council district breakdowns, particularly in neighborhood parks and streets, and drainage.
So that's good. I mean, because I think we do all need to be working on that. The second point is, I think Mr. Kleiman makes a good point. When you take on debt for capital, you have to. It should be part of that process. Should be a capital planning process that looks at all assets and the value of those assets. And so part of this process should be to understand what is our value on our balance sheet, what is planned for, what is hoped for, you know, what is not used, and just kind of break them into categories so we as a council can make a decision that we want to be, you know, we're going to tighten our belt over here or approach it in a different way. So I think that's a good exercise. I want to come back to Mr. Kingston's question so I'm clear. I think he remembered right on that discussion. We put that, whatever you said, we put in this year's budget, 123 into 16, right, 15, 16. So at the end of that, are our streets as good as they were a year ago?
Well, we hope mathematically that is the case. Notice that I said hope,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I don't like the word hope.
Yeah, I know that you don't like the word hope, but I'm an engineer, so I'm going to, you know, because I don't have it precise. What we're aiming for at this point is a lane mile count of lane miles that we have treated, because we don't know for sure what the degradation rate is. That's an estimated based upon the information that we have
today. So just doing a straight math count, we're trying to hit the lane miles.
I love the fact that you're an engineer. So what is the metric that you look at for degradation?
What we're looking at right now is lane miles being treated, because that is something that we know
not
we can
control.
Not the
street.
Condition, because the streets are the condition can change based upon weather patterns. If we had a terrible year, that is more variable, and we don't know it, and we don't measure it every year.
Why don't we?
Because it takes us, we're set up to do it every other year, just in terms of the equipment and manpower that we have to evaluate it. So we're in between a field evaluation, and we're updating the model based upon treatments. So the best thing that we can do is hit the lane miles being treated. That one we can guarantee you all on.
Okay, so based on the lane miles that are treated in your engineering math, you're assuming that the conditions are as good as they were last year?
Correct.
Okay. And the money we've got in the budget for next year, even though it's more, would accomplish that as well?
Correct.
Okay.
Predicated on having a bond program.
I just want to... What do you mean predicated?
Because remember, part of the money that we need to maintain that zero is $27 million worth of treatment in that bond program.
That's right. I remember that. Okay, thank you. All right. My last comment is this timing question. I just want to reiterate for the sake of history that we knew about this pension fund some time ago, and at the beginning of the year I suggested that we put off this until we figured out what we're doing with the pension fund, all right? And so everybody, I think, told me to go pound sand there, and I think that's okay. I don't want to be dribbling bond elections out with the council, but I think there's a good argument to put this off till next fall, okay? I'm going to say it again, that we slow our roll down here a little bit. We figure out what's happened to the pension. We do this work, and we do it in the fall versus in May. I'm not a broken record because this is only twice that I've said it, but just for the sake of discussion, as we say. So, Mr. Kleinman, you're up next.
Thank you, Mike. I just want to apologize for my outburst to you guys and to the staffer from Property Department. It was just not appropriate, and I know you guys worked very hard to bring us this information, and just please accept my apology.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm in a position, I know the mayor's advocated for delaying it, then there's this big $800 million. I'm more in the middle on this, going with something that's $500 million to get it done. I think it's an important that we make this investment in the city of Dallas. $500 million is a substantial investment. It's not a small number at all. But I would like us to be cautious in moving forward and taking it in every couple years. Certainly, we don't want this to be our last bond program, and if we go too big here, we've heard from AC, if we can't find a fix to the pension system other than the city of Dallas putting in some money with a giant bond program, that money is going to have to come from a tax rate increase, or the money is going to have to come in with a substantial reduction in services from the general fund and how we deliver services to our citizens. So that's why I would like to do a hedge this time, because we also don't want to be in the position with a big bond program. We get it out there. The pension system requires money from the city of Dallas. We don't really have the money to put in, because then I know what Moody's and Standard & Poor's are going to do to us. They're going to junk our bond status. And so that's at risk here, and why I recognize we've got communities with a lot of need. They've had it for some time, particularly in southern Dallas. So we just need to take a measured, incremental approach. We don't need to say right now, since times are so good in the city of Dallas and our citizens have waited so long, that we need to postpone this. But on the other hand, we don't need to go out and max the credit card because we know there may be a big obligation coming. And so that's why in this one, I'm advocating for a middle position, if you will, between the two ends of waiting and not doing anything and going big with the $800 million. I would like to go moderate with something like $500 million, continue to work our way through this pension issue, which I'm optimistic that we can find a solution. But if the city does have to put in money, then we will have a little bit of capacity without having to go increase the tax rate, which our citizens definitely don't want, and without completely cutting city services, which when you talk about cutting city services, that means that we're going to do a whole bunch of layoffs to get the numbers down, and we're dramatically going to have to reduce. I'll tell you what goes on the chopping block first, because I was here in 2011. It's our libraries that go on the chopping block, reduced hours, lay people off. It's the rec centers. It's the little bit of money we have for street repairs. We start laying people off there. It's those quality of life issues that go first when we hit tough times, we have to make cuts. And so that's why I'm advocating on this one a middle-of-the-road approach. I think we're going to get some monopoly money in a few minutes. Yes. I don't know if it's actually monopoly money or not, but
pseudo-monopoly
money and put it in various buckets. Mm-hmm. I'd encourage some people, if there's not a bucket, just to give some of the money back.
And we've provided for that. So you will give $300 back to the banker. So
they give it back to the banker. Let's put that aside. It's still there. We're not spending it. If we work through this Dallas Police and Fire Pension System issue and we don't need the money, we can turn around and do another bond program in May when it's most when it's the cheapest time to do it. That's why I also know we are all attracted to May, because we're watching the bottom line, and November elections cost more for the city of Dallas than May's, particularly when we already have to call election in May. So let's put that money aside. That doesn't mean we're not going to spend it on a bond program. That just means some of the money we're not going to spend today on a bond program, and we're going to wait and see how the pension system plays out. And so that's how I'll be allocating my monopoly money today. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm ready to get to that exercise and play with that money. But I understand Mr. Griggs' comments, and I kind of agree. If we can get around that, if we really reduce that and we have a smaller package, I think it just to kind of limit the arguments over the shiny new objects, it could just be streets. So that's something to consider. Because I think we have to be cautious about this pension. It's going to affect possibly our bond rating. I don't think we're talking about bond money at this time. But in with regards to the streets, I mean, Mr. Kingston is absolutely right. When it's very difficult for us to try to understand what this zero degradation really means and how it's evaluated. And we brought it to budget, finance, and audit with the plan, and we haven't brought it back. So let's sit down and talk about that before the end of the year, because I know most of the street work happens. That, you know, the new money, the $17 million last year, we did that. I think it starts to work through with, you know, spring through fall. So as soon as we get into the fall, let's go ahead and bring that back there and evaluate where we're at, so we do have a better understanding, because it is a little confusing, and I understand because evaluations. I won't elaborate on that, but and what it's really going to take. Sometimes it's been a little perplexing, and with the excessive or surplus property. I have three of these properties that were bought for libraries sitting in my district, and I know this is, and I'm not saying we shouldn't strategize and figure out how we can get those built, but, you know, it just goes back to the empty promises. I mean, I've got they're probably pretty valuable properties because they're sitting in high real estate areas with the Preston Forest, Park Forest and the Preston Royal and then the Vickery Meadow. But again, I don't know how you explain that back to the constituents that they're not going to get libraries, and maybe we have to do the roads, and that's what we say at this point. But so the measured approach is reasonable, and thanks for bringing that up. And I'm going to be strongly supportive of most of this program going towards streets. That's what we hear, and that's what we want. You know, needs the most attention from our dollars at this point, and we're not being able to find it in the general fund.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes, Mr. Mayor Rawlings, I wanted to make sure I understood your position so that I could share that with my constituents. What was your suggestion again, if you could repeat that for me so I can make a decision here?
What I was saying was, because of the variable, the unknown of the pension fund, that having an election in the fall as opposed to the May would give us more information. So it's not to do nothing. It's actually to follow the will of the council, which at the last meeting that we met, everybody wanted to do $800 million, which I think is the right number. It's just putting the timing a little further out. So it does give us flexibility if we find out something new in the pension fund. Go ahead. I want to go ahead and do it right. I just want to do it a little bit later.
So when you say the fall, you're speaking of
next year,
2017.
Yes.
Okay, and that's fine because I've used that date, so I feel good about that. I want to just, I think at this point I want to support your rationale, and I want us to do the right thing cautiously, and I don't want us, and this also gives me an opportunity as just a council member to get with our constituents. Many of our constituents are still outside of the loop of understanding just what a bond package is and what it can do for the community. So I'm excited about having the additional opportunities to educate our constituency. But I will, I don't want us to keep rushing. I keep hearing those words, and then every time I hear, we got to hurry up. And I don't know if my blood pressure is going up or what's going on, but I just feel like we just keep saying, we have to hurry. But understand it is important to be respectful of time, but doing the right thing with the right information, the right actions gives us an opportunity to create a better foundation. So I would support Mayor Rawlings on that, and I hope I didn't use too much time, Mayor. I have to keep jabbing
you're
it
good.
About that.
You're good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wanted to bring up a couple of other strategies that we need to engage in, which I think are going to become evident to staff because of the council's desire to set the size of the package before we divvy up who gets what. And Ms. Gates spoke to this about if we all agree that streets are the main priority, it's going to reduce the amount of brain damage about what else gets funded. And so I can say that streets may not be my only priority, but they are certainly the top priority. What I would like staff to do, given that you know that there's a constraint with regard to the maximum amount we're going to borrow, and we can continue to argue about that. I'm not arguing for a specific number, is to start whittling down the wishes from the needs. The needs inventory is rightly built out of all of the desires of the various interest holders and constituents. I don't want you to change the way you gather that data. What I want you to do is, in your professional judgment, start culling that down because you know we can't afford the whole thing. And with a specific mandate, which I think you can hear from this council, toward maintenance of existing investments as opposed to the construction of new stuff. And that could be helpful to us, I think, in communicating with our constituents about, okay, here's what's really, really needed. If I am just guessing that we are going to put $500 million in streets. That's just my guess. That's $35.7 million a district if we divvy it up evenly. I don't know if we will. And so let's start power ranking these projects for $35.7 million. The other thing I really would like staff to start looking into is impact fees. I think we're getting a better and better sense of the non-direct costs that development brings. And we don't want to slow down development in any way, but what we know is that we have our system of tax assessments simply does not create a fair split between commercial and residential properties. One way to combat that is to talk about
the number of new parks we need per development and the number of new lanes of bike miles we need per development. And in the same way that we talk about stormwater, in the same way that we just rationalized the new stormwater fee system, we need to look at all the other aspects of running a city that are important and impacted by new development. And have that be simply cost recovery, not trying to make revenue on it, simply cost recovery. We can, I feel confident, get close to reasonably accurate numbers on that. And that's going to provide, for instance, parks, $325 million wish list that y'all sent us. Thank you, Mr. Moreno. Abandon hope. Abandon hope, e-park advocates. There will be no $325 million for parks in this election, I don't believe. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure. So going forward, if parks has a way to access something that really is rationally tied to development, that will be ongoing. That helps us budget. It just helps us budget better. All of this borrowing is just makeup. It's just makeup for crap we didn't think of at the time, and so we spend it in the wrong place. We didn't realize the roof was going to fail, and so we went to a bunch of nice dinners throughout the year. I mean, that's essentially what we've done, and now we have to go to the credit card. So the more we can anticipate that stuff, the less we're going to have to do this stuff. And honestly, all of us, I think, are pretty well aligned in not loving the give and take and the fighting over who gets what out of this pie. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
Well, we haven't had a parks proposition for 10 years. And yes, that's why we've piled up $320-some million in needs for the parks. Are we going to go another 4 or 5 years without having a parks proposition? I've gone along with the streets things, although my streets aren't in bad shape because everybody else needs these streets. I understand that. But if my district is not going to get anything out of this in terms of anything other than streets, why would we be supportive of it? So my folks I'm hearing want parks. They want pocket parks. They want neighborhood parks. We are underparked in Far North Dallas. When they built out Far North Dallas, they said the land is too valuable to give it to parks. If we have to wait in the hopes that this city council is going to impose impact fees on developers in order to get parks, I will die of old age before that happens probably. So, I mean, we've been talking about impact fees for years and years and years around here. It's never happened. We're afraid to do it. And besides which, I have very little ability to have new development in my district. So are you guys going to give me your parks impact fees so I can get some parks? I kind of doubt it. So I'm going to advocate that we not have a bond program without a parks proposition. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Clayton hadn't talked, and then we'll come back to Mr. Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll play the opposite argument of Ms. Grayson, which is, but I think to get to a common point, you know, my area is desperate for streets, but yet all the narrative that comes out is, well, we want to take care of parks over streets, and especially big projects that have lobbyists that want it. You know, I think where I would really like to go that I would hope that we would find some conclusion on is, you know, always talk needs and wants. Now, what I consider somebody wanting, they think they need it. So I hope as we do this, just because somebody tells us I need X millions for this project doesn't mean they have to have that much. So at the very least, where I think we can come to some middle ground is instead of taking people at face value and whatever project comes up of, well, I need $50 million for this or $25 million for that, that we at least kind of take from a council sobering view of, we have so many needs, they just don't necessarily get all of it if they're going to get any of it. So, anyway, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I've been doing some ciphering, as Jethro and Beverly Hillbillies used to talk about doing, so that makes me be a little bit dangerous. But there, if we did something like taking heart to Mr. Griggs' comment, you know, and if we could really somewhat – again, just somewhat look at streets, to the tune, just hear me out on the math. I'll kind of walk you through a couple of different possibilities. If we did $500 million, that would give us $35.7 million apiece if we divided equally. Again, assuming that we do that, there, it may be based on need, so that may not be exactly accurate. If we did $400 million, that would be $28.5 million each. Now, because of parks, I feel you, because I understand it. I've been waiting a long time, too. We're underserved in our parks. We don't have a signature park. But let's say if we were to add the $100 million for parks, then that would give $7.14 million each across 14 districts. Or let's say if you did $150 million, it would be $10.7 million each across those 14 districts. So you could have a $550 or $650 million package, substantially address streets that, you know, $400 or $500 million, whatever you want to do, and then you'd still have a substantial amount for parks. Now, that means parking everything else, forgetting the fire stations, libraries, on and on and on. However, Ms. Gates, if she needs a library, maybe rather than parks, she uses that money for a library. But we would have more of an alternative choice. I think we could go out to our constituents. Again, using Mr. Griggs' argument that, hey, we've got a huge pension liability equation here, and because we don't know the answer yet, and here's the good news, if we get past it, if those lawsuits go away, if we settle on other things, then we could come back within a year or two and then increase the credit card spending another $350 million, let's say, to go to our billion that we could do today. That might be more responsible, and I certainly want to be a team player. I mean, it feels right, you know, just thinking it through. I'd love to do the $800 or $850 million. There's no doubt about it, because I've waited, our district's waited a long time. But primarily the streets, if I could get my streets, and I'm making progress already with the work that we've done. Thank you, Rick. I mean, you guys have done a great job. I'm watching it daily, and there's been a monumental change. But if I could get that amount of money on, and again, just streets, sidewalks, alleys, it's pure dedication of that money, and then get some money for my parks. That way I could get the money for our signature park at Crawford with that stipend of money, and then I could buy some extra park land. You know, I could do a few things. Then I could probably hold on and wait till we perhaps get good news on the police, fire, pension thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kleiman. Oh, Ms. Arnold. Excuse me, Ms. Arnold.
Let me just throw this out here, too. I think we also have to be conscious and sensitive to the fact that we can't just keep going back to the voters every couple of years and asking for more money. We have bonds that we're quoting now of years, and the constituents are saying, you mean you're still working with the 2012 bond? You're still working with 2006? So they're confused, and I'm trying to explain what's going on because I'm baffled. So I think we need to hit it and hit it with one good bond and let them see the results of our work and our requests instead of just, you're just kind of piecemealing here and there. And I too support the mayor addressing the issue of the pension fund. We need to get that and hit it, and then move on. But that's just my feeling. As a voter, I don't want you to keep coming back to me for a bond vote. Thank you.
Mr. Kleiman. Thank you. I just want us to think in terms of what's a consumable and what's an investment in the city. And this is part of my press for the pay-as-you-go stuff. I think streets are consumables, and that's why I'd rather pay for them as we use them. And I do think that investments in new infrastructure, as well as park infrastructure, and new things bring real value to our city, and that's what we're investing in our future. And we end up paying for so much deferred maintenance and paying for things that we consume along the way using our bond program, and I don't think that's as appropriate as borrowing money to invest in the future of our city. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to cut off the conversation here and move to the next exercise. So, Ms. Jordan?
Great. So, staff, bring out the boxes and the money.
More money.
Thank you.
You might want to count your money. You're just now back up to the people.
All right, guys. Order in the court. Jill, did you want
to
give us the rules?
The rules are...
Hey, guys, please.
Okay, so, Kurt, you're our banker, and if you'll come up to this table right here. So, in your envelope is money...
I want to make sure everybody... Make sure you know who the banker is. Okay.
Banker. So, at this point... And where's the abstain box? The banker has the box. So I'm going to use Mr. Griggs as an example. He only wants $500 million, so he's going to take the $300, and he's going to go see the banker and turn in $300. I'm going to pick on the mayor now, is say that you only want streets, then you come up to the street box, and you put all your money in there. Mr. Callahan said, 325 for parks, 75.
Come on, guys, please give Ms. Jordan attention.
75 for Fair Park and the rest for street. So he'll go to those boxes. The directors, so Sarah and Eric, if you will come up, you're going to stand behind your box in case the council member has questions. So libraries, I see you. Where's culture? Do they come? All right, so please come, if you're a director, stand behind your box. So if you have questions about your proposition, you're going to stand behind your box. So we'll move the boxes and kind of spread them out because of the people. And if you decide that you need more money because you've listened to this conversation, but by gosh, you want more, go see the banker. And we've got money up to the capacity of the city. And if you're going crazy over there and you want a tax rate increase, we've got even more money. So you don't have to spend it all, or you can spend more. And at this point, have some fun shopping is the way I'm looking at it. Yeah, you all can start. Just when you know how you want to spend your money.
I think Eric's there. Right, he has questions about specifics.
What's the currency?
I don't know that we'll have time. Yeah, we're going to publish.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Hi. Dun 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 dun. Okay. For those of you who are listening at home, all right, we're about done. All right. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for that exercise, Ms. Jordan. They will tabulate all this information. Excuse me, guys. They'll tabulate all this information. They will send it out to us to, so we can understand what we did. And then they will come back at our next briefing on November the 2nd. And kind of talk about next steps. Good work. The meeting's adjourned at 2:51 p.m. There are no afternoon speakers. Thank you.